Brian Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
Well, it's the big show. Yes, it's a big bad show tonight. Oh. Oh. Yeah, it's the big show. Come on, bring it up and turn on all the lights, y'all. Oh. Well, get ready for something that you'll never know. You won't see it coming, but I promise you'll know. The big show.
Well, good afternoon. Happy New Year. Welcome. Brian Noonan in for Ro Khanna and Anna DeVellante, starting a little early, so I guess technically now I'm in for Bill and Wendy, but we'll just we'll call it a wash and say that the Ro Khanna show is starting a little bit before 3 o'clock today. Again, Happy New Year. Hope your New Year's Eve was wonderful and your New Year is off to a great start. It's a beautiful day, a little cold, but you know what? It's January in Chicago, so I don't want to hear anybody complaining about it. We are firmly ensconced in the Allstate Showcase studio, toasty warm for now until they decide to turn the heat off downstairs, which they normally do. But let's not worry about that. We have a great show for you. It's always more fun when you get involved. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. When you call in, you'll be talking to Shanta. She is the executive producer of today's big broadcast. If you're nice to her, you get to me. That's how it works. And if you like to monitor us on social media, Facebook and Twitter, it's Brian Noonan Show. So you can go there. We look at that throughout the program as well. We're going to have some fun today. We're going to talk to Dr. Andrew Sacco after 3:30. Talk a little bit about New Year's resolutions. I'm not a resolution guy. Maybe you are. We're going to talk about, you know, why we make these resolutions and how maybe you can stick to yours a little bit better. Big thing going on with driver's licenses in the state of Illinois come January 10th. We'll get into that. You may not be able to travel quite as freely as you are now, and you might be surprised why. We're going to talk rock and roll myths, too, after 4:30. We've got the author of the wonderful book, Take a Walk on the Dark Side. Our Gary Patterson will join us. Karen Conti is going to be here after 5. We'll talk about the top legal stories of last year. We'll talk about the affluenza kid who is now fighting extradition. Bill Cosby's case gets murkier and murkier. We'll do that. Man, oh man, that's a lot to do. Then after 6 o'clock, if you want to get a psychic reading, we'll have you do that too, because we are going to be joined after 6 by psychic medium Susan Rowland. All of that. Sam Panionovich is doing sports. David Jennings has the traffic. We are fully stocked today. Now, you were working all yesterday, too, weren't you, Sam? You were
actually busy. I had the day off yesterday.
Did you? I saw you yesterday, though, didn't I?
I was off at WGM, but I'm always on the clock somewhere.
You're always working sports. The sports never stops.
I get typecast, though.
What do you I have to ask, because we're following a Northwestern game that I know right now Dave Ennett is weeping because the Wildcats got it handed to him, 45-6 to the Tennessee Volunteers. It was going into the game, everybody said these two offenses were very similar. What do you think? What do you think led to the?
Well, you didn't hear
trouble?
Me say that. You know, I've been a critic of North, one of the few ones. You know, it's a freshman quarterback. Remember that redshirt freshman quarterback, sophomore running back. The defense was very good, but it's hard to contain the speed of the SEC when you don't have good field position. And Northwestern just kept punting from inside their own 30. Right. Tennessee had great field, and eventually the time of possession just wore Northwestern out. I mean, it was close at half, you know, it was 17-6.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
You know, that's close, close-ish. But in the second half, they were outscored 28-0. That was it.
Yeah, and you're right. You got a freshman quarterback and a sophomore running back, so good things ahead, you would think, if they keep developing the way they did this year. They had, as Dave said, and it's true, they had some big wins this year, some exciting moments. So you have to look at these guys and go, all right, they're going to get better as time goes on.
That being said, though, this defense did need to turn Tennessee over, and I don't believe the Vols had a single turnover. Yeah, no turnovers for Tennessee, and this was a Northwestern team that thrived off of taking the ball away from their opponents.
Right.
They turned it over 4 times.
Yeah, rough day for the Wildcats, but, you know, they made it to the bowl, which was good. And
10 wins. This would have been the first time ever they won 11 games if they would have won today.
So 10 wins is a good season. You can't you have a disappointing end, but you had a great regular season, so, you know, better. We'll just leave it at that. Congratulations on a great season, and have fun for the next few hours in Florida. Enjoy the weather. All right, we're going to do this, and then when we come back, it's going to be news time, and then we're going to kick things off. I need to know if you watched the new Chi-Town Rising last night, if you were part of that debacle, what you did, and we'll get into some questionable New Year's Eve behavior by one of our local treasures. So we'll do all of that on the other side of the news. That's happening in 2 minutes, 720 WGN. Happy New Year. It's Brian Noonan in for Rokan and Anna DeVlantes. We're here until 7 o'clock. If you missed the beginning of the show, which happened before 3 o'clock, a lot to get to today. Always good to have you along. 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the text. Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. And that's how you get a hold of us. All right. Hopefully your new year is off to a great start. A lot of people moving around Michigan Avenue outside the Allstate Showcase studio. They're bundled up, but seem to be in a good mood. Unlike if you were following any of the TV shows, the local New Year's Eve celebrations on social media last night, a lot of people taking issue with the initial broadcast of Chi-Town Rising. I'm wondering if you watched that, what you thought of it, if you were like me, and I just felt it was one of these things where they were trying so hard to convince you that they were having fun that the more they talked about it, the less I believed that anybody along Wacker Drive was having any fun. And when they went to the crowds, there were a lot of shots of people, you know, looking very fatigued and bored until you could tell a producer got them all whipped up. Then they started waving their thunder sticks and screaming, "Oh, I'm on television." And other than Mario Lopez, who I have a passing knowledge of, I didn't have any idea who any of the correspondents were at all. So that felt very weird. There's so much talent in this town, whether it's improvers, comics, anchor people. There's talent all over this city. And yet, nobody local was on this show. This had all the earmarks of some producer sitting somewhere going, "Yeah, let's try to pitch Chicago on this show and tell them how great it's going to make the city look. And then we'll bring in all our hired hacks. And, you know, we've got some guy," so I think his name was Akbar, and he was wearing like a, he looked like one of the redcoats from the Revolutionary War. And he had no idea. Then there was a girl who talked like, she was not just like this. It was very exciting. And she talked, I think she was at Navy Pier. The best part of her coverage was the drunk girls that would dance behind her whenever she was on camera. There was this one blonde woman. She won New Year's Eve because every time the camera came on, Nasal Jones, who was the correspondent from Navy Pier, this girl would dance behind her, and it was hilarious. So I like that part of it. And I will say, here's my good point of it. The star looked really pretty when it went up. Granted, it didn't coincide with the actual countdown to midnight, and Chicago was playing, and I was watching this, and I'm like, boy, Chicago's cutting it real close. And here it goes, and I'm watching my clock at home because I'm obsessive like this. So I'm watching to see if the countdown is synced to the Chi-Town Rising star, which it was not. And then O Lang Syne started to kind of play over the final notes of Chicago, and the star was already at the top, and nobody knew if it was actually New Year's. But the star looked pretty, and the fireworks, granted, I was only watching it on TV, the fireworks looked very, very impressive. So I'll give them kudos for a pretty star and fireworks. But the rest of the broadcast, I equated it to a hostage situation with a tinge of Stockholm syndrome. Because the people who were there knew they couldn't leave, so they were trying to make the best of it. And yet, I have a feeling at 12:15, people were fleeing like rats from a sinking ship. And I may be wrong, so if you were there, correct me at 312-981-7200. And let me know, maybe you really enjoyed it, because according to the Nielsen ratings, straight up at midnight, Chi-Town Rising beat the Channel 7 Countdown Chicago, hosted by, the always amorous Mark Giangreco. Yes, we will get into that, Sam, because, let's address it now. But I will tell you that Chi-Town Rising had a 17.1 rating and a 36 share. And at midnight, Channel 7 had a 14.2 rating and a 30 share. So close, but everybody wanted to see the new event.
Out of curiosity,
yes, sir.
When I first moved here, it was kind of made clear to me that you don't say Chai Town.
Yeah.
So, what's with that whole name thing?
Because it's out of towners who are doing it. And we talked about this yesterday. People were up in arms. There were a few people who said, listen, Chi-Town is fine. I'm not one of them. I think Chicago is a fine name for a city.
Mm, agreed.
It's been here for a while. It seems to last. It's got longevity. But there were some people who liked it. Most people seem to despise the name, Chi-Town Rising.
It just sounds kind of, well, like a second-rate knockoff.
That's what we were. Come on, let's be honest. That's what this was. It was a second-rate New York knockoff. Somebody pitched it, and Hyatt, you know, God bless them, they got behind it. Corona got behind it. They pumped a lot of money into it. They wanted it to be successful. Based on the ratings, you know it's going to be back next year.
Yep.
So, all right, we know it's going to be back next year. How would you improve it? What other than having local people involved in it? And changing the name and pretty much rejiggering the whole thing and making sure that the star and the clock were coordinated. Other than those minor little deals and adding some of the free stuff that they knocked off a couple weeks beforehand and maybe not charging over $100 to stand on Wacker Drive in front of the stage. Other than that, what might you want to change? And let's touch on this before the break and then we will get into it. Sam brought it up with his very disturbing sound effects.
Year of the dog, Brian.
You're like
Year of the dog.
You're like Michael Winslow over there with the Mark Giangreco. First, was he wearing eyeliner? He looked like he should be in like a Rocky Horror live production. He looked like he had eyeliner on. And everybody, it wasn't just me being snarky. We started watching it. My wife, my buddy, my daughter and my daughter's friend, we had just finished playing Pie Face.
This is after Pie Face. Did you win Pie Face?
I won one game of Pie Face. I lost the first game of
Everybody
Pie Face.
Everybody wins Pie Face.
We actually played by the rules. You have to score to win.
But everybody wins because everybody gets the pie in the face.
That's the losing.
Well,
you lose when you get
everybody
it.
Wins.
Everybody wins. It's fun for all. All ages, everybody play. Have you ever played it?
No, but I want to.
Dude, come over. We'll play some Pie
Face. Doing it at 4:30?
Had I known, I would have brought it with. We could have played it. David could have come down. Shanta could have come in. We could have spent like two segments just playing Pie Face. That would have been fascinating radio.
People, what is Pie Face?
Oh, you don't know what Pie Face is? It's a board. It's not a board game because there's no board.
Okay.
But you know how when you go to an amusement park or something, you put your face through a cardboard cutout to get a picture?
Yeah.
Like, so you look like a king or a clown or whatever.
Or somebody in the stocks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So you put your face through this little cutout, and there's a catapult hand that you fill with whipped cream. And you spin the spinner, and it tells you how many times you have to crank the handle. It's like Russian roulette. And so you crank the handle, and if you get the pie in the face, you don't get any points. But if you say I crank it five times. Well, I get double my points because it didn't catapult cream into my face. So now I got 10 points. I'm on my way to 25, which is what you need to win.
Uh-huh.
It's fun.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Even if you're sober, it's fun. Because everybody at the table last night was sober. We weren't even drinking. And I had a couple beers, but everybody else...
drinking. I had a couple beers.
Nobody else had anything to drink.
Is there a dog present as a requirement for the game to lick the face of the person who gets the cream?
No.
So it doesn't go to waste?
Well, the dogs were there. Some of the people at the table would just scrape the cream off and shove it right in their mouth. Other people were taking paper towel, wiping it off. There was a lot of fun with the cream, as the kids like to say. I don't know what kids would say that, but there's a lot of fun with the cream. And speaking of licking it off the face, let's take a break, and then we got to get to Mark Giangreco licking Janet Davies. Because
no.
Those two have engaged in questionable activities in the past. But when Giangreco, I don't know if Janet Davies had jam on her face and he was just going to try to get it off, or if he likes the taste of Davies sweat. I don't know what was going on with him. Let's talk about that, and let's talk about any inappropriate behavior you saw, and we'll get your thoughts on Chi-Town Rising. A lot to get to. Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anna on 720 WGN. A lot on the plate. We're talking about the coverage of New Year's Eve last night. If you watched Chi-Town Rising, what you thought of it, what you think needs to be fixed, because the ratings were good, so you know it's coming back. And we also are getting into Mark Giangreco licking Janet Davies and other inappropriate New Year's Eve behavior. But first, let's go to Thomas. He's been hanging on. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Wonderful. It's
Happy New Year.
Sunny day. You too. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
I think the name itself, it sounded, the Chi-Town Rising, it sounded like it didn't come from a local entity. I don't know. As a local, as a person that was born in Chicago, I would have been preferred they would have called it Windy City Rising, you know, or something that would identify Chicago as the Windy City, because we are the Windy City, and I think that that should be emphasized.
That would have been good. It would have been better, I think. Now, I'm getting a lot of texts from people saying, you guys must be very young because Chi-Town is cool. I don't know when Chi-Town was cool, but
in
my lifetime.
Not for me. I mean, I'm from Chicago originally, and I think someone who may have texts may have been a young person that really doesn't know their history very well. Chi-Town is just a sort of a nickname that people give to different places. And, of course, there was a movie about with the name Chi. It was called Chi-Rack, of course. And that's what kind of scared me about that. And I said, you know what? That didn't fit. That really did not fit. The coverage was good and everything, the fireworks. What I was confused was the star supposed to rise when the
That's the rising. It's instead of what sets us apart, Thomas, because we don't drop a ball like everybody else. We rise
up. Gonna rise. Right. Yeah. Now that would have been cool if they would have just if there would have been a sort of a depiction of the wind over the river or over the lake, whatever, and it would be called Windy City Rising, and it would be like the wind.
Brings it up.
Rising the star, yeah.
Thomas, you got to get a job with this promoter and try to fix things for next year. I appreciate the call. Thanks. Happy New Year. Take care. Let's talk to Wayne real fast. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, Brian. I'm a big fan of yours. You do a great job at GN.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I was reading Robert Feder this morning, and he wrote that this show was sold to 40 markets outside of Chicago.
Yes, it was. It was part of the NBC. NBC had sold it from everywhere from Minneapolis to Dallas, and it was also on their digital stream, and Telemundo carried it as well. So they made they made their money with the ratings. They were happy with that, so that's why we know it's going to come back.
So their market was outside of Chicago, so calling it Chi-Town Rising may have worked because people that are not from Chicago can equate to think that it's called Chi-Town.
Yeah, but it's they didn't make any secret of the fact that it was Chicago, so they weren't trying to they weren't trying to cover it. And you know, I'm trying to think, what do they call the one in from New York? I guess they just call it New Year's Rockin' Eve or something.
Right, exactly.
So, but we can't use that, so we have to come up with something else. Well, Wayne, Happy New Year! Thanks for the call. And let's get now. I know Sam, you were bothered by Giangreco, but you had other issues with the Channel 7 Countdown Chicago 2016
Because Ji-Suk Yi, who is a contributor for Windy City Live, she did her typical antics near the end of the
antics.
Year. She's got they show her like behind a bar and she's passing out drinks. She's like, "Oh my God, we're having so much fun!" And then at the very end of the show, she jumps in a hot tub with like four other people, and they're all guys. And she's like, "This is so much fun!" And her vocal range is really that bad. I'm not exaggerating. She was just acting like the drunk woman.
Yeah.
And this has been a problem with Channel 7.
I don't know. And see, that's the problem. We don't know if they're actually hammered.
Or they're faking.
Or if they're not.
Either way.
And Jose Sanders, a lot of times when they go to him, doesn't look like he knows even where he is. And I like all these people when they're doing the news and stuff. But on the New Year's Eve shows, it's very tricky. You know, because you've done live stuff. You've been part of live broadcast. It's different once you're out. And New Year's Eve, everybody thinks that they have to pretend that they're having so much fun. They have to, "Oh, man, you wish you were here because this is the most fun we've ever had." There was one girl on the woman, I guess, on the Chi-Town Rising. And I think it might have been Nasally Jones. They came to her the first time at Navy Pier, and she was doing the dance. And we, all of us in the house just started laughing. We're like, oh, no, she didn't just do that. And then she did it again. She, like, danced off to the side, and then she danced back in. And I was like, oh, no. This is unbelievably
bad. There's a front. You know what?
I mean, maybe I'm just jaded.
You
but,
are. Well, no, maybe about it.
Hey, I'm an ex-New Yorker. All so right. I used to go. I've been to Times Square on New Year's Eve. And contrary to what you may see on television, there is a good chunk of that crowd that's in Times Square that as soon as the ball drops, we're beating feet to the nearest train station.
Well, that's because you've been standing out there for 18 hours.
What 18 hours? I never did that.
Well, the people there, they've been standing there for, you know, 18 hours.
I would get there, you know, 9, 10 o'clock, 2 hours, two and a half tops.
Yeah.
As soon as the ball drops, I'm heading for the shuttle, heading to Grand Central, hopping Metro North, going back to Bridgeport, Connecticut. Okay? We didn't stick around.
Well, I don't know how long
the train ride in from the suburbs is interesting on New Year's Eve.
Oh, it's all, yeah. I don't think that
highly,
changes from
highly entertaining.
City to city, it's going to be different.
It's like, ew, really? Stop, please. It's like, you're not in a bar.
Instead of Chi-Town Rising, I would have called it, why not, you know, throw some Sinatra flavor in there and call the show My Kind of Town.
Something
anything.
Countdown
Chi-Town
or something.
Rising.
Right, yeah. If you're going to do the rising with the star, it's got to be, there's got to be more of an explanation because that name leaves everything way too open for negative connotations. And what are they rising from? It was a convoluted name.
How close does that star resemble the actual?
The star on the flag?
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Okay.
I thought the star itself looked nice, and I got to, you know, all week when I was sitting in for Roe and Anna, they were testing it, so I thought the star actually looked cool. But the fact that it was about 20 seconds off for the countdown was problematic. The fact that, you know, and you had Chicago there, which is great. Okay, they're a fantastic band going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I got no problem with them. American Authors, they're a good band. I was a little surprised that they canceled the free stuff that they were supposed to have beforehand to get things going because they were so worried about the crowd control. I'm eager to see when the actual numbers come out how many people were down here.
What did you think of the location and where the stage was put?
They're limited because Hyatt is the main sponsor. Hyatt is the name sponsor, so it's got to be by the Hyatt. There's not a lot of room. Like Times Square, you can stretch it out. If they had it somewhere else where there was a little more room, maybe it would have been better. But, you know, because the stage was right there, you didn't have a lot of room on Broadcast Boulevard. And because of the layout, you had to have all these multiple locations instead of one big centralized place. But where could we have it other than Millennium Park or Navy Pier that we'd have that kind of centralized location?
Actually, there is another spot.
Where?
You could put them on a couple of barges.
Oh, and go just along the lakefront.
And then both people, well, no, you can put them on a couple of barges, right, the bands, right in front of the hotel on the river. Now you've got both sides of the river for people.
Yeah, but then I.
Walkway then level got, plus up on street level.
Then you've got the worry from the bands and their people that you've got, one, if you're drawing all attention into the water, somebody's taking a header into the river. Two, you've got a lot of drunk revelers who now can throw things down onto the band.
You put them in between the bridge for Lakeshore Drive and Michigan Avenue.
Put them under the bridge?
No, no.
Like they're between, the trolls in the Billy Goat's Gruff?
Between the two bridges, there is nowhere for people to throw anything that far out. Because there's nothing over them. Yeah.
All right.
I don't know.
Listen.
Let's say.
Maybe they hire us as consultants next year. One final text on this before we go to the news. Brian, I enjoyed it. It might not have been great, but it sure was nice to have an alternative to Janet Davies' show that has gotten real tired in recent years. That's from Don. So, people watched it. It won the night, even though for earlier, before midnight, the gap between Channel 7 and Channel 5 was much closer, but at midnight, Chi-Town Rising, it won the night. So there you go. On the other side of the news, today is New Year's Day. Many of you may have made resolutions. We'll give you some tips on maybe how you can keep those resolutions and make them successful. Brian Noonan for Ro Khan and Anna DeVellantes on 720 WGN. Happy New Year. Hope you are having a wonderful afternoon. Thanks for spending some of it with us. If you're like most people, or many people rather, you made some resolutions today. Everybody makes their New Year's resolutions. Some people keep them. A lot of people don't. I don't know why that is. I don't know where resolutions came from. But one man who might be able to help us, Dr. Peter Sacco. He is the author of Breaking Those Damn Habits and Finally Getting Things Right. He joins me now on 720 WGN. Dr. Sacco, thanks for taking some time. Happy New Year.
Well, happy New Year there, Brian, and everybody out there in Chicago. Hope you're having a great New Year already.
So far, so good. You know, today people are making those reservations or resolutions, and maybe reservations. Maybe that was one of their resolutions, to make reservations to go somewhere. Where did this whole resolution thing start, do you know?
You know what? There's no specific thing or specific time with it. Some people say, well, it was like a couple hundred years ago. Sometimes in the 1800s it started, and others said, well, no, it was more like something like 80 years ago. There really is nothing specific, but what it is, I guess to a degree, Brian, it is a wiping, you know, the slate clean sort of deal. New year, new mindset, out with the old, in with the new. And that's kind of like where that approach started.
And that makes sense. We all want to change things and better ourselves, but the numbers don't really bear that out. The research says that only 8% of the people who make resolutions actually succeed at them. What makes it so hard for us to change?
Well, first of all, with those 8% that actually succeed, they make it to roughly the 28 days that is required to either create a new habit or get rid of an old habit. And I think the key thing is, Brian, is that the reason those 8% succeed is because they're clear about what it is, the change that they want to bring about in their lives. They're very passionate about it, but more importantly, it's all about themselves, meaning they've chose this change to eliminate a bad habit, create a good habit, on their own. They're not being forced into it, not being coerced, and they're not, you know, buying into, oh my God, got to do it, everybody else in society is doing it, it's in vogue, so I'm going to do it too. So there's a greater motivation because it's intrinsic, meaning that there's a greater payoff mentally and emotionally inside.
Is it easier for someone to be successful if they are trying to create a new habit rather than to break an old bad habit?
That's an interesting point and a question. Is it easier? I'm not going to say it's easier, and I'm not going to say it's more difficult. I think what you're looking at more is of it in terms of the quality, because some habits took many, many years to build up because they became addictions even, right. i.e. smoking or incredible weight gain. So some people, you know, Brian, will quit really easy. Like, they'll be able to do it easy, but their mindset is so much stronger and they're more passionate about it, whereas somebody's developed a habit, let's say, or something over a shorter period of time, but yet they can't kick it because they really don't view it as a problem and they don't view it as a major concern, or they just really don't want it. They procrastinate about it.
Dr. Peter Sacco is my guest. You can go to petersacco.com or follow him on Twitter at Dr. Peter Andrew Sacco, author of Breaking Those Damn Habits and Finally Getting Things Right, which is what we're talking about. Interesting. You brought up 28 days to create a new habit. What is that? That if we can do something for 28 days, then it becomes ingrained in us and it's easier for us to keep going?
Yeah, Brian, you actually used the proper term, ingrained. I think that's the clinical term in neuro-linguistic programming, which looks at it, you know, the brain and the mind studies and that stuff. And so what it does is that the longer you do something, you start to ingrain, embed in a new neural pathway. And then once this pathway is created, it's like a toboggan going down the same slope. Or imagine somebody that keeps cutting across your lawn. Over a period of time, people will just continually walk in that bald patch. And they go, my gosh, why don't they go on the other way? Because it's just an ingrained thing. And that's the same thing with 28 days. Once you get to that point, there's something that clicks in your brain, and it really will work. And by the way, this is based on, I've worked with addiction, really bad addictions, for about 20 years with thousands and thousands of people. And they all said, this really will work, the principles that I've applied in this book.
And is that why when you hear people go into rehab, a lot of it's 28 days?
Yeah, actually, that's what it is. It's roughly around 28 days. And you know, for more severe cases, sometimes people will go for 30 to 60-day programs, like two-month programs.
Right.
And with the nature of this book, it's not only treating addictions, but it's more of a habitual sense, or more of just creating, you know, things that you want to see the changes in your life.
Now, we all hear, you know, the popular resolutions are, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to quit smoking. What are some of the other big promises that people make to themselves? And maybe are there new ones that you're seeing come up that maybe weren't the last 3 to 5 years people weren't making these kind of resolutions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, some of the more interesting ones. And, you know, by the way, like I wanted to put this book out for free, but my publisher said, no, we got to charge at least 99 cents.
That's, I was going to ask you, you know, because people see 99 cents for a book. Well, why is it 99 cents?
Because I wanted to keep it short, under 100 pages, and then also less than the cup of coffee. So going back to your point, there's a lot of people that want to give up caffeine consumption in the new year, and some people actually say, I want to read more in the new year. So, hey, touche, here you got something under 100 pages, and plus less than the price of cup of coffee. But what was really interesting, Brian, one of the more interesting things that people have said to me when I was doing research for this and since then is I want to spend less time on online social media and less time texting and actually more face-to-face interaction with people.
And that makes sense because I know from personal experience being with people and sometimes being guilty of it myself, that seems to be consuming more and more people. Have you found that that's a difficult habit to break?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's so convenient. You've got people in terms of communication at the palm and your fingertips. They're in the palm of your hand, literally on the phone. So you can save so much time by just sending off a text and not actually having to see them. And it's really interesting. I was talking to some people actually today at the gym, which I went on the first day, and they were saying, you know what, I thought about actually giving up the online social media stuff because I wanted to spend more time seeing people, but I spent too much bloody time with them over the holidays, and then last night I've seen enough of them for another year.
Well, that's, you know, there's only so much personal interaction you can take. Let's be honest. Some people wear you out. You want to get away from them quick.
Yeah, you know, and that's, I think, what it is, too. And, I preached this in the book, in life. You know, choose the people that you're going to allow into your circle, you know, choose wisely. Because there are some people that are going to be, I call them psychic vampires that'll drain you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the flip side also holds, too. You might be the vampire to them, you know, bringing your drama into their life. And so that's one of the other things, too, I've heard people saying for 2016. They want drama-free lives. And I think the online social media brings a lot of that out there because you have your own reality TV show going.
Right, and you're always comparing yourself to other people.
You know, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things in 2016. I think people, going back to the 8% that are successful and the 92% that are not as successful yet but can get there if they don't give up and keep trying, is that you have to run your own race. Don't compare yourselves to the successes of others, but realize that you can do it on your own because you're a unique individual, and everybody has the abilities to make the change they want.
Now, we look at people trying to make resolutions, and are some just too hard for people? Is that why they fail at them? Or why do some resolutions seem to have more success and other resolutions seem to we just can't get there?
Well, I think when you're setting resolutions, the ones that are going to be more readily attainable are the ones that you have control over within your life. And you also pick one or two to work on and make gradual changes rather than trying like 5 to 10 and hoping to do, you know, a whole cleansing, you know, a whole buffet of resolutions at one time. Because what happens is when one or two start to not be as successful, you lose, you know, oh boy, this isn't working. You lose your confidence. And then that has a trickle over effect and the dominoes start to fall with the other ones. And then I think also too, Brian, you've got to be realistic. If you say that it's like, hey, man, I want to lose 50 pounds this year. Hey, let's be realistic. It took a while to put that extra 50 pounds on. You're not going to lose it in 1 week or two or maybe four or, you know, 2 or 3 months. It's going to take a while. So people will get discouraged when they don't see the results instantly because, hey, we live in an instant gratification society.
Well, is it better then to set if 50 pounds, let's use that example. If I'm going to lose 50 pounds this year, if that's your goal, should you be that specific? Should you break it down into smaller increments? What's a good way for, because that's a fine resolution, what ways could ensure success?
Well, first off, set it down, write it down on a piece of paper. So put what your ideal goal is, then you're going to work towards it. Your unconscious mind will lead you towards it. And once again, even a medical doctor probably would not be able to say, you know, with 100% certainty, okay, given your body mass, your basal metabolic rate, your bone structure, it should take you this X amount of time. Because nobody can say for sure, you know, what the metabolism is going to be like at a specific age. So when it's not working as fast as you want it to, keep on going, because you will get to that point. So I say, write it down, what your ideal weight is, goal. I also am strong into vision boards. Put pictures of yourself before you had the weight on, you gain the weight, or, you know, something or somebody that represents your ideal body weight. Look at them. Buy clothes that will represent your ideal body weight, because you'll start working towards that. And I think what's really important, Brian, is state your intention to other people.
I was going to ask you that, because a lot of people, they say, I made this resolution, but they haven't told anybody. Is it because you're giving yourself some outside pressure, you don't want to fail in front of other people, that telling other people kind of spurs you along to do better?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And that could be a two-faced coin. Only tell people that are going to be encouraging. Don't go to tell people, hey, you know what, I'm going to lose 50 pounds, and they look at you and go, oh, good luck with that. You know, I don't think so. So you want to set your intentions. You want to be specific and clear. You want to visualize it. You want to start to feel yourself at your ideal, whatever it is, your weight, let's say, in weight loss, because then you're going to speed the process up of achieving it. But then you're also going to want to talk to people that will be encouraging. First of all, they will help you with their words, with their kindness, and whatever way else they can help you. But secondly, you are also, as you said, Brian, you're putting yourself out there too. So now you're going to live to your words. And I think the greatest two words in the history of humanity are the words I am, those first two words, because whatever you say after that, that's going to become your reality. So if you tell somebody, hey, I am adamant about, you know, dropping 50 pounds this year, then that is going to be your reality. And so you want to pick the right people.
Dr. Peter Sacco is my guest. A couple more minutes with the doctor before we let you go on to enjoy your New Year's Day. In the book, Breaking Those Damn Habits and Finally Getting Things Right, you alluded to procrastination. Can procrastination be an addiction?
Oh, absolutely. Procrastination is the most habitual and addictive behavior that so many people embrace with open arms. And it's gotten that way because procrastination is a shortcut to getting out of stuff. So
right.
You can either not want to do something and procrastinate about it, because then you avoid the responsibility, so you avoid potentially failing. You can procrastinate because you live in a day of entitlement, this day and age. And so if you don't do it, somebody else will. They'll save your bacon, change it. You don't get in much trouble. If it's done over and over and you know you can get away with it, then you keep it up. And also, procrastination itself is just a form of laziness. Or you just say, hey, I'm not ready for it. But you haven't been ready for it for 20 years, and it just builds and builds and builds.
And then if you procrastinate enough, can someone overcome that if they've been procrastinating, like you said, for 20 years? Can there just be something that flips the switch and one day they say, you know what, I am not going to procrastinate anymore? Can that happen?
Absolutely. In one minute, just by saying those words. And I wrote a book right now, Enough is Enough, several years ago, bestseller, for people that had addiction, really bad addiction problems. And one of the things I found in that book, Brian, and the people I interviewed with that really bad addictions, they would tell me, I am sick and tired of being sick and tired, and right now, enough is enough. And they got to that point where they said it 1 minute, and they made that change in their life.
Well, if people want to get that book, Enough is Enough, or Breaking Those Damn Habits and Finally Getting Things Right, which is only 99 cents, and as you said, cheaper than a cup of coffee, and a nice quick read under 100 pages, they can go to petersacco.com, S-A-C-C-O, and they can follow you on Twitter at Dr. Peter Andrew Sacco. I appreciate the time today, Doctor. Thanks very much, and Happy New Year.
Well, thank you so much, Brian, and everybody. Happy New Year in the Windy City. Hope you have a great 2016.
Thank you. Take care. That's Dr. Peter Andrew Sacco. You can follow him again on Twitter or go to petersacco.com. Oh, my. Brian Noonan for Rowan Anna. Sam ran out, came back with a whole crate full of beverages. I don't know what you're trying to do. Krista, our fine engineer, was wondering if you're trying to get me drunk. Take
Maybe.
Advantage of me. I don't know how that goes.
Well, I told you. See, I was here last Friday, and I thought you were
Christmas
here.
Day?
No, I'm sorry. Actually, no, not last Friday. Last Thursday.
Wednesday or Thursday.
The
yeah.
days
One
have started
days,
to run together.
The
and
holidays.
I said, hey, guess what? I got a present for after the show. And you said, well, I'm not here.
Right.
So now I felt like I had to reimburse.
Oh, well, thank you. That's going to be fun. Well, I'm sure by 7 o'clock, let's you know what we do? We have a couple cocktails, and then we try to have the psychic read us when we're altered and see if the readings are completely different.
I actually brought back a Sharpie, too, so you just make a tally on your forearm.
Oh, for drinks?
You just count. Make sure you don't get out of hand.
You know what? Had we known, we could have done one of those did you ever see the old WKRP in Cincinnati episode? Where they tried, it was going to be New Year's Eve, and they were going to, on the air, drink, and the state trooper was going to be there and see how much they could drink before they got drunk. And I think it was Johnny Fever. The more he drank, the more sober he was, and the quicker he passed the tests. So maybe we could have done that. We were talking about resolutions. Did you make any resolutions?
No,
are you a
I
resolution
don't believe
guy?
It. No, I stopped doing it about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Just because I'd only meet about 50% of them.
And then it gets depressing, doesn't it? Discouraging.
And sometimes you get one out of four, and you're like, oh, was it really that bad of a year? No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. But, you know, sometimes you end up focusing on one. I'm not a resolution guy either. Because back when I was younger, I would try to make them, and I would make them just because I thought I had to. And then by July or January 2nd, I had forgotten what I'd even resolved. So it wasn't bad. But now I feel that I have to start believing in New Year's resolutions because Kim Kardashian does not believe in New Year's resolutions. Mm. And I don't want to pattern myself in any way in Kim Kardashian. She does set goals for herself, though. That's where she's different than us, Sam.
Stay married?
To stay married, that might be one. To not buy her kid a $3,500 coat. Do you see that? And I don't know why that sticks in my head, but I saw this story this morning. Northwest had a $3,500 parka. And I guess if your parents are...
To try and break the internet?
Is that the goal, to break the internet? It might be.
One of those famous photo shoots of hers.
She's already done it. She doesn't need to have that goal anymore.
Oh, okay.
She's already broken the internet. And the seam of her pants, obviously. That's why... That's why she was out there. To be honest, she says, I'm not really into New Year's resolutions. I've done them before, but I don't believe in them. For some people, they are a good jumping off point, but for me, I like to set goals throughout the year. What's the difference? I think setting little goals every month is productive, and long-term goals like saving money or learning a new language are important, too. I wonder how many languages Kim Kardashian knows. And I know I'm sniping, but I don't think she really even knows English that well, does she? Maybe
you are feeding right now into the Kardashian beast. Well, you don't watch it, but we talk about it.
Well, we're not talking about it anymore. I've thrown out the paper. I've tossed it away, Sam. You're right. Why should I feed the beast?
That's the problem.
All right. We have to talk. We were talking about Chi-Town Rising, and I mentioned that Chicago was there, the band, and we didn't get into the performance. And then we got a text from our friend George Bliss, and he said, listen, he talked to the guys from Chicago, or he knows the guys from Chicago, and he said that they admitted that they were out of tune. And I didn't want to bring that up because people were already saying I was being petty and critical of Chi-Town Rising. But you know what? That's my job, to look at things and comment and get your feedback on them as well. And it broke my heart that when Chicago started playing, I thought, oh, they don't sound very good. And I love Chicago. And I wanted that. So that's why I didn't bring it up, because it was one of those things where, you know, say you went to see, I don't know, pick your favorite athlete. Say you went to see Michael Jordan play one night. And he was just awful that night. You would still want him to. You wouldn't bring it up because he's done so well in the past, and he will do so well in the future that you go, okay, everybody has an off night. So that's kind of what I was giving Chicago. Plus, they were trying to play horns, and it's 15 degrees, and their lips are cold, and the ligatures on the horn. It's a bad setup for horn players.
Not to mention all the obnoxious people causing scenes and making noise in the background.
And Lopez is there near them, just being skeevy.
Did he have enough hair gel in? I wasn't sure.
Mario Lopez was coiffed. He was well coiffed.
Did he have enough hair product in?
I think so. I didn't see it.
Was it frozen hair product by that point?
No.
It looked all natural.
He's ahead of the game.
This from the bald guy, okay? I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
I don't use any hair product either. I'm not too far from you, David, but I did notice he, and that was his, I didn't realize that was his wife that was co-hosting with him. That was his, I read that today in some of the reviews, that was his wife, along with Akbar and Nasal Jones. And Akbar is his real name.
Nasal Jones.
And Nasal Jones is the woman. I didn't catch her name. She's the dancer from over.
Of the two names, I would have thought Nasal would be the real name, not Akbar.
Yeah, no. And Nasal Jones is the real name. Akbar, I just made up. No, every time they said Akbar, I went, "Are they? Is this no?" But that was it. They never said his last name, so maybe he's like Cher or Madonna. He's just Akbar. But I had no idea who Akbar was. I didn't know who anybody was. I know Mario Lopez hosts, what is it, Extra or one of those magazine shows, Hollywood magazine shows, that feed the Kardashian beast, Sam, that you don't want to do.
That's the problem.
What do you want me to do? Ignore it? Sure.
Yeah.
All right, I'll ignore it. So anyway, Chicago was bad and off-key. That's what that's – and it's true. You know what? They were bad and off-key, but in my mind, I justified it by saying, well, at least they're not lip-syncing. They were actually performing. Because nobody would lip sync that bad. It had to be live. And they were doing it. So I gave them credit. And again, I look at the instruments they were playing in that weather outside. It just, I give them the break. On the other side of the news, did you know that your Illinois driver's license may not work at the airport in a couple of weeks? Well, we'll get into it. Happy New Year. It's Brian Noonan for Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantes. Ro and Anna will be back on Monday after their well-deserved holiday break. It's been fun sitting in for them all week. Hope you are having a wonderful New Year's Day. A lot of traffic outside the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. People bundled up. They're wandering around enjoying their New Year's Day. After the 4:30 news, we're going to talk to author Gary Patterson, and he is the author of Rock and Roll Myths and Legends. We're going to talk about some crazy rock and roll myths, the 27 Club, if you haven't heard about that. A lot of fun stuff after 4:30. Here's something, though, that may not be fun for those of us in Illinois, Missouri, and a couple other states after January 10th. You may have heard some of it. I know, Sam, you talked about this the other night briefly. You were on with Hannah Stanley, and you guys touched on this. And I've been trying to do more research. We've reached out to TSA. We reached out to the Secretary of State. We've reached out to a number of people. Couldn't get anybody on. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the Real ID Act, which was passed in 2005. It was enacted by the 9/11 Commission's recommendation that the federal government set standards for the issuance of sources of identification, such as driver's licenses. So, long story short, some states have complied with this, which means they have to be more strict when issuing driver's licenses. They have to really look at where people were born, where they're from, that kind of thing. Those driver's licenses in those states will be able to be used when you want to travel and if you're going into some restricted space. Other states, like Illinois, have been dragging their feet for any number of reasons, some because there's been arguments over privacy issues, things like that, arguments that you're trying to create a national ID card, which people don't want because some of the information on these secure driver's licenses will be saved in a national database. Illinois has already gotten one extension. That extension has expired. On January 10th, Illinois and a number of other states are in danger of this act being enforced. The act, as I said, enact established minimum standards for license issuance and production and prohibits federal agencies from accepting for certain purposes driver's license and identification cards from states not meeting the act's minimum standards. The purposes covered by the act are accessing federal facilities, entering nuclear power plants, which most of us don't have to worry about. You, Sam, like to go to nuclear power plants
or,
on vacation.
Or going into a federal, like the federal building.
Yes, I haven't. I haven't finished.
Okay.
I haven't finished.
Which could get to be entertaining. Listen, IRS, I can't come see you.
Right.
Why? They won't let me in.
And here are the restricted areas. There's four phases of restricted areas. Places with restricted access, such as areas accessible by agency personnel, contractors, and their guests for DHS's things like that. Restricted areas for all federal facilities and nuclear power plants, semi-restricted areas, which are areas available to the general public but subject to ID-based access or control. That's for most federal facilities, subject to limitations. Access to federal facilities will continue to be allowed for purposes of applying for or receiving federal benefits, which is good. And then the one that affects almost all of us, Phase 4, boarding federally regulated commercial aircraft. Now, that is where the federal government holds leverage over the states that still have not complied, because they can say, the states are saying, listen, our people aren't going into nuclear power plants. So they don't go into restricted federal areas for the most part, the ones that do have that kind of clearance. But most of us, at some point, will go to an airport and try to get on a plane. And unless Illinois falls in line, we're not going to be able to do that. Now, you will be able to use, if you have a passport, you'll be able to use that if you go to the airport. But a lot of people don't have passports. They just travel, you know, in the United States. They don't travel abroad. They may not have a passport. You're not going to be able to do it. Privacy experts, civil liberty organizations, and libertarian groups are saying that the new law would create something like a national identification card, which I mentioned. Federal and state officials have been arguing for years about the merits of the law. The biggest leverage, as I said, is commercial air travel. Department of Homeland Security said it would provide a schedule by the end of the year for when airport screeners would start accepting only driver's licenses that complied with federal standards. Again, right now, it could be January 10th. That's according to the government website. January 10th is when the extension that Illinois had expires, and that's when we could all be in trouble.
This is out of our hands. This is the state's fault.
Right. It is the state's fault. And they're saying it, you know, states are saying, one, it's a cost thing. Two, they're hiding behind the privacy thing. Missouri's lieutenant governor has come out really, really strong against this. Missouri has been one of the states that has been the most vocal about not following the Real ID Act. And his statement said, this is the Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder of Missouri. He issued this statement the other day, quote, "The real-world implications of a nationalized ID system with biometric photo data that allows for long-distance identification and tracking of residents is disturbing. That's why in 2009, the Missouri General Assembly passed House Bill 361 to stand athwart the federal government's continued encroachment of Missourians' liberties. That bill passed by a vote of 83-69 in the Missouri House, unanimously in the Senate, and was signed into law by Governor Jay Nixon. Kinder and Homeland Security is now disregarding Missouri law in violation of the 10th Amendment to the Constitution. In its letter to states, Homeland Security wrote, quote, as we continue the phased-in enforcement of the Real ID Act, the consequences of continued noncompliance will grow with each milestone. And then Kinder said, that's an overt threat, to which I would say to the federal government, we in Missouri are not interested in compliance with this kind of federal overreach. All right. Now, we all know that the old saying, I think it was Thomas Jefferson, if you give up liberty for security, you deserve neither. And I'm paraphrasing, but that's the gist of it. Are we willing to have what could be considered a national ID? Because, as I said, Some of this information will be kept in a central location. Well, I know a lot of people are saying, well, I don't have anything to hide. I'm a U.S. citizen. I'm not doing anything illegal. That's fine. Here's all that's needed. Here's all that the state has to do to get in compliance. All Illinois would have to do when issuing their driver's license, and it doesn't sound like a lot. It requires applicants to provide documents to prove their identity, social security number, and immigration status to the United States. Okay. Again, that doesn't sound hard. The new licenses would have to have one of those, either a magnetic strip or one of the chips like are coming out in the new credit cards so they can be read. The information will eventually be shared through a system administered by the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, a private group that provides support services to state motor vehicle departments. A press officer at the Department of Homeland Security said the law's intention was not to create a national identification card, but to extend what the agency calls best practices on issuing driver's licenses that apply to all states. So, do you believe that? Do you believe that the government is trying to collect data to keep in one central database? Or are we just trying to make the system universal throughout the 50 states? If my driver's license in Illinois is one way and the driver's licenses in Indiana are another way and Wisconsin and Michigan and everybody's different, how do we know who's giving out driver's licenses? And how do we know who's getting driver's license?
The Tribune reported that the Illinois Secretary of State spokesman said that this would cost Illinois, which is already in a financial problem, right?
We got no money.
Budget is a concern. It would cost Illinois $50 to $60 million over 4 years. On the other side of that coin, though, Homeland Security said that Illinois has not provided adequate justification to receive any more compliance and that they've already been given two extensions.
Yes, we've had extensions, and we knew this was coming. So,
did you think the government was going to just forget about it?
Yeah, well, there's 50 states. We'll get lost in the shuffle somehow. Missouri's making a lot of noise. They're going to pay attention to Missouri first, and then they'll pay attention to us. Now, as I mentioned, we reached out, and by we, I mean Shanta, because she was working hard on this, because she believes, as I do, that this story has been underreported. And you may show up, we don't know for sure, but you may show up at the airport on January 11th and not be able to travel. So we got to figure out what's going on. We have a statement from Homeland Security, and we've been given authorization to use this person's name. I will share that statement with you, but I want to get your thoughts on this. 312-981-7200. Are you siding with the people of Missouri and the government of Missouri that is saying, listen, this is an overreach by the government. I don't want my data in a central database. But let's be honest, the government has all your data. If you file taxes, they have your data. If you go to the hospital, we have your information is out there. Does it make a difference if it's on your driver's license as well? Or do you think it's about time we start overseeing all the states to figure out who's getting driver's licenses? And, you know, you look at Paris, you look at other attacks, and you say, well, you know, maybe we have to do this. 312-981-7200. I'll hear from you on the other side. It's WGN. Brian Noonan in for Ro Khan. We're talking about the Real ID Act and the chance that as of January 10th, the Department of Homeland Security could restrict airline travel to states, Illinois being one of them, that have not gotten their driver's license up to snuff. We got a statement from Amanda DeGroff, a DHS spokesperson. The Department of Homeland Security is working with state officials to ensure their compliance with Real ID Act standards and to grant a state an extension where warranted. Illinois has not yet provided adequate justification to receive an extension on compliance with the requirements of the Real ID Act passed by Congress in 2005. As of October 10, 2015, federal agencies may only accept driver's licenses and identification cards issued by the states that are compliant with the Real ID Act or have an extension for accessing most federal facilities, including military bases, and entering nuclear power plants. Starting on January 10, 2016, driver's licenses and identification cards issued by Illinois will not be accepted for these purposes. Illinois residents visiting a federal facility can provide another form of identification or follow procedures that the facility allows for persons without acceptable identification. Illinois can request an extension at any time if there are new developments or additional relevant information regarding the steps they are taking to comply with the Real ID Act requirement. Again, that is from Amanda DeGroff, who is a Department of Homeland Security spokesperson. Now, Jesse White sent a letter to the Tribune yesterday. You would think he would send it on a day where people are paying attention. New Year's Eve, not really the day. But he was responding to a December 30th editorial which addressed recent decision by the Department of Homeland Security to deny Illinois' request for a one-year extension to the Real ID Act. This is from the Secretary of State's letter to the Tribune. DHS's decision is misguided and short-sighted. DHS has been inconsistent in developing a national implementation plan, altering the requirements and changing timelines since the law was implemented a decade ago. While we strongly disagree with DHS's decision, we will continue to work with DHS on Illinois' status and with the General Assembly to resolve this in a manner that best serves the public. As we repeatedly pointed out to DHS, Illinois has or will soon meet 84% of the requirements of the Real ID Act, including manufacturing driver's licenses and identification cards that meet or exceed the standards for security and utilizing a biometric identification process. All right, you've heard from DHS. You've heard from the Secretary of State. What do you think? 312-981-7200. Hi, Scott. You're on WGN.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know. We have the right to travel. It's granted by God, and they're telling us they're granting us the ability to travel. It's unconstitutional.
Well, they're giving you the right to travel on federally restricted aircraft. If you want to drive or take the bus or take the train, you can travel wherever you want. They're just saying the federal government regulates the airlines and air travel, and so they're saying
that's
where
restriction. We'll be traveling state to state. state. We will need a federal ID to drive. They've done this in every area. Look at the Native Americans. What happened to their way of life? The government didn't take care of them.
Well,
you
still need a government-issued document to drive.
Yeah.
And you need a government-issued ID if you're out and you're asked by law enforcement, you know, for ID. We all have to carry ID.
Technically, no. I had a cop tell me, he's like, you don't technically, what law says you have to have it with you? It's all about the law. And if they interpret the law a certain way, the way they want to, not a way that benefits us, it benefits them and they profit. Dangerous.
All right, Scott, thank you for the call. Let's say hi to Pat. What's up, Pat?
Well, I have a couple things to say about it. Number one, I think the U.S. government needs to keep their nose out of my business. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I don't even have a speeding ticket, number one. Number two, the state of Illinois can't even figure out their damn budget. How are they supposed to implement extra millions of dollars? That's point number two. Number three, what? They can't even clean up the graft with people having more than one Social Security number. The minute the government puts their hands into something, it's more of a mess than it was when they even started. And as far as Homeland Security goes, you know what? I hate to say this. I'm not saying they're not doing a good job, but you get a maniac in control, and they're going to find a way to circumvent every effort that we make.
Oh, well, yeah, there's always somebody who is looking to beat the system, and we can take all the precautions we want, but somebody will always slip through.
Yeah, I think this having a certain kind of driver's license or an ID is ridiculous.
All right.
It's just ridiculous.
Well, Pat, thanks for the call. Happy New Year. We'll get to some more. Kevin has been holding on. Hi, Kevin, you're on WGN.
Hey, flip side to this, as a business traveler, more security the better. Nothing's happened since 9/11. Instead of putting the burden on the state, put it on the traveler. Go get a travel ID, a federal mandated travel ID. You want to travel between states, you pay for it and get it done. I personally have a KTN number, a known traveler number that's available. Went out and got fingerprinted so I could go to the shorter security lines. So there's a spend.
There is and you're right, Kevin. Thank you for the call. There is that way you can get pre-approved so you don't have to wait in the TSA lines and all of that. And again, it's not restricting travel. This isn't going to be like the old movies where they stop you at the border of Indiana and go, "Let me see your papers." It's not like that. They're basically saying that, "Listen, if you want to travel by air, which is federally regulated, your state has to have a stricter driver's license." So that what they're saying is, and we could debate it all day, they're saying, listen, we want to make sure people who are getting driver's licenses should get driver's licenses, and that they are citizens, and that we're giving government IDs to the right people. That's I think, what's going on here. Susan's been hanging on. Hi, Susan. Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you. Well, first of all, I'm surprised I haven't heard this story, because you'd think the airlines would be the ones who would be really complaining, because there's so many people. I'm 65 years old. I have my driver's license, but I also have my Social Security card and my Medicare card, which are, you know, federally issued IDs. But you think that the airlines could lose a tremendous amount of travel, and that they would be, you know, if I can't fly to Detroit to visit my relatives, you know, in the middle of January because of this law, you think that I would have heard about this, because the airlines could lose an incredible amount of travel. A lot of people that travel are people that don't have, you know, anything other than a driver's license or whatever.
Right. A lot of people don't have passports.
Well, I don't have a passport.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, in fact, nowadays, I guess you have to have a passport just to go to Canada. For Pete's sakes, I grew up in Detroit. We used to go to Windsor just for lunch.
Right.
You know, and go buy dishes or something like that. But I'm surprised the airlines haven't really complained, because they stand to lose an incredible amount of travel revenue. And it'd be great for Amtrak. You know, it could really up the Amtrak revenues.
Well, it's going to be one of those things. I think once the government decides that the time has come for them to start enforcing it, then you'll start hearing from the airlines. Because you're right, once it hits them in the pocketbook, that's when things always start to change. Happy New Year,
there's
Susan.
A lot of older, Well, thank you. Happy New Year to you.
Take care. You too. Let's one more before we go to news. That's from Ann. Hi, Ann. Got a couple seconds.
Just one, two things. I believe there should be government control over people in the sense of IDs and that. And I'm also tired of people who are glad to be citizens of America, but then complain all the time about that they don't want to do this, they don't want to do that, they don't want to do this, and separate states also. So
yeah, well, people don't like being told what to do, Ann. Thank you for the call. Happy New Year. Noonan in for Ro Khan and Anna DeVellantes on 720 WGN. After 5 o'clock, our old pal Karen Conti is going to join us. We'll talk about 2015's top legal stories, this affluenza punk who is who's fighting extradition, Bill Cosby, and so much more. And Karen has a very special project that she has created just for the show. So we'll be talking to Karen after 5 o'clock. But right now, I am a big lover of rock and roll. Sam, I know, is a rock and roller from way back. We hear all these stories. There's a lot of myths, a lot of things surrounding rock and roll that makes it all that more, much more exciting. Our Gary Patterson is the author of Take a Walk on the Dark Side, Rock and Roll Myths, Legends, and Curses, and he joins us now on WGN. Thanks for joining us. I call you Gary. Our Gary, how would you like to be addressed? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Brian. It's great to be with you.
Good to be with you, too. All right, let's start at the beginning. Because I think just about anybody who knows rock and roll, knows music, the first myth we ever heard about was Robert Johnson down at the crossroads in Mississippi. Is that the first rock and roll myth?
Well, you know, you'd have to go there because there wasn't rock and roll in 1938. So
right.
What you'd have to do is you'd take a look at Robert Johnson's guitar playing technique, which inspired so many, well, the great British guitar players like Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Keith Richards, they all listened to Robert Johnson. So I always start there because I think about, you know, his technique really inspired a whole generation in the 60s of the greatest to come rock guitarists. So the idea of selling your soul to the devil at a crossroads, I mean, why crossroads?
Yeah, why?
Well, you know, if you take a look through literature, if you've read Young Goodman Brown by Nathaniel Hawthorne, that's where he meets the devil, is at a crossroads. And they used to bury people who committed suicide or people who were murderers who were executed. They buried them in crossroads so that people could walk over their graves. And the story goes that witches held Sabbaths at crossroads. So it was a place where the devil would obviously hang out. So a lot of the bluesmen believed if you take your guitar and you set out late at night and you play a few riffs, you would feel a presence walk up behind you, but you would not dare to turn around and look at him. So what you would do, you would just pass your guitar over your shoulder and you would listen to this creature, or this, well, actually Old Scratch, I guess we'd say in the South.
Sure.
Tune your guitar to a very special tuning, hand it back, and if you took it back, you'd made your pact. You'd be given fame, you'd be given the adoration of many women, but you would live a short life. And if you look through history, I mean, Alexander the Great claimed that he was given a choice by Zeus to either have a long life and not know fame, or to have a short life and to no fame. So he chose the short life. So you get the idea of dying young. And that's why Robert Johnson died at 27. And it's amazing how many rock stars died at the same age. So it almost makes you think there may have been something otherworldly unleashed at that crossroads, because it's just the strangest thing is more rock stars die at 27 than any other age.
Well, let's get into that, which is something that you bring up in the book, too, the 27 Club. Obviously, 27, you just mentioned, that's when Robert Johnson died, a lot of other.
Mm-hmm.
When did people start noticing, or when did you start noticing that, wow, this is becoming a trend, this 27?
Well, you know, when I wrote my second book, which was called Hellhounds on Their Trail, which I took off a Robert Johnson single, which was Hellhound on My Trail, I thought, as I was looking up some information, I mean, I did a chapter on Johnson, and I was interested in Brian Jones and Janis Joplin and Jim Morrison because they all died, you know, tragically. And the one thing I noticed was they were all 27. And I thought, wow, this is, you know, this is rather interesting. So then I started really doing some research. And I was doing Coast to Coast one night, and a guy who called in was doing a thing in statistics in graduate school, and he said, I just want you to know I ran the ages of all rock stars, from Richie Valens, who died at 17 in the plane crash with Buddy Holly, to everyone, and the number one age that rock stars die is 27, like in your book. So it's odd, because a few years ago I was driving to Florida, and I bet I had 50 phone calls, and it was all about Amy Winehouse.
Yep.
And when she died, she was 27, and they all wanted to know the 27 Club. So I guess that you would say in 1998 is when it started, when I wrote Hellhounds on My Trail. But what a great story, and it's odd and spooky and scary. And you also got some stories, you know, about rock stars who probably were murdered.
At that age?
Unfortunately, and not because they were 27, but they were murdered, and they just happened to be 27, like Jimi Hendrix. Have you heard that story?
No, please share it.
Okay, I did a show with Tabby Wright, who was I guess you'd say he started out as a roadie for the Animals, so he knew Chas Chandler.
Okay.
And when Chandler heard Hendrix play, Chandler was a producer, but he really couldn't get a record deal, so they went to Mike Jeffries, who was later to become Hendrix's manager, and you had this great burst of career from Jimi Hendrix, but then he decided to drop Mike Jeffrey. And Jeffrey had borrowed over $250,000 to build Electric Ladyland Studios, and he owed some people that would probably, you'd say, were mobsters.
Okay, and people you don't want to owe money to?
No, people you do not want to owe money to. And if Hendrix was leaving him, he'd be stuck with that. But Jimi Hendrix had a $2 million life insurance policy. And I heard this from Tabby Wright. I've got it on tape. He said that Mike Jeffrey told him that they murdered Hendrix to make it look like suicide. He was actually waterboarded with wine.
Whoa.
And when I researched the Jimi Hendrix story, the thing that amazed me was that the coroner's report said that there was enough wine in his hair, like a whole wine bottle was in his hair, and that wine was oozing from his lips. But if you look at the toxicology report, he just had enough alcohol in his bloodstream to maybe drink a beer. And yet, you know, all this wine was present.
Gotcha.
So he'd taken 9 sleeping pills. The wine had been poured down his throat, and it was announced that he had asphyxiated. Well, Eric Burdon goes on the radio on the BBC and says, oh, I think Jimmy took his own way out, committed suicide. Well,
right.
That made Jeffrey furious, because if you commit suicide, you don't collect your life insurance policies. So he had told the story, and it makes it even odd. I mean, I guess I'd say odder would be that Jeffrey was supposed to fly back to England from Spain, and he was on this plane, and the plane blew up in midair, and I think they found his watch. And the funny thing is, the more you study it, Mike Jeffrey worked with the MI5 in England, sort of like James Bond,
right,
and was an explosive expert. So there's some people who say that he actually set up this plane explosion to get out of it and to collect the money he had on the royalties from the Hendrix estate.
Whoa.
So you look at all that and you're saying, oh my gosh, you know, how could they have missed that? And when I did my book, you know, I had listened to Monica Daneman, who was his girlfriend at the time, and no one had interviewed the ambulance drivers or the doctor. And it turned out that the ambulance driver said that when they got to Hendrix's flat, that he was there by himself and he was dead. That they didn't set him in a position in the ambulance, that his head was in the wrong position, and he asphyxiated. They said no one was there. He was dead on arrival, and he was dead on arrival in the hospital. She made this whole story up.
Holy smokes.
And then she committed suicide. I mean, it's just so odd. I mean, Devin Wilson, who he had written Dolly Dagger for, I don't think she really was convinced that he had asphyxiated, but a few weeks after his death, she takes a swan dive off the Hotel Chelsea, and she's dead. I don't think Noel Redding ever believed that he committed suicide or that he had died of asphyxiation, so that they believed he was murdered. But, you know, it's just a strange story, and the thing about a great legend is it keeps on going on, and that's what Hendrix has become, and Brian Jones, and You know, actually, I did a show, and we were talking about Janis Joplin, and I got a strange email at my website, and this person said, I was with Janis the night she died. Would you like the real story? Well, I hear this all the time, you know.
Sure.
And I said, sure, tell me the real story. I never heard anything else back. But, you know, the real story is probably what it was.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, whether you find Bobby Fuller's body laying across a seat with gasoline down his throat and badly beaten, and the Hollywood police said that he committed suicide by drinking gasoline, which is impossible.
Right.
It's just so many great stories, you know.
Our Gary Patterson is my guest. He's written Take a Walk on the Dark Side. He's written The Walrus Was Paul, The Great Beetle Death Clues, and Hellhounds on Their Trails. Can you hang on for 1 minute?
Yeah.
Terrific. You can go to rgarypatterson.com, get all the books, do more research. We've got some more fascinating stories that we're going to share. We'll do that on the other side. It's 720 WGN. Oh, yeah, a little Skinner coming back on 720 WGN. And that's fitting because on this New Year's Day, I am talking to R. Gary Patterson. He is the author of a number of books, Take a Walk on the Dark Side, Rock and Roll, Myths, Legends, and Curses. Paul, The Walrus Was Paul was his first book, and that immediately became a huge success with Beatles fans and everybody else. And I appreciate you taking some time on this New Year's Day. The books are fascinating, and the stories are wild. Since we played some Lynyrd Skynyrd coming back, everybody knows that we've got, you know, some fatalities in Lynyrd Skynyrd, but you write about how some of those are very oddly connected to some of the fatalities in another great Southern rock band, the Allman Brothers.
Well, you know, the Allman Brothers, whether they like it or not, actually coined the phrase Southern rock. And when they moved to, Macon, Georgia, and signed with Capricorn Records, they really did most of their money from when they played on the road, because even though their albums were fabulous, they didn't sell that well. So we probably start with Duane Allman. And Duane Allman is considered to be the greatest slide guitar player who ever lived. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he just had this incredible technique. And actually, I'm going to date myself here, but I saw the Allman Brothers probably 2 weeks before this happened. But I saw him when I was in college, and they went to Nashville. This was in 1970, and Duane Allman had an overdose of opium, and his fingertips had turned blue, and they rushed him by ambulance to the hospital, and the doctor comes out of the emergency room, and he tells the band, he says, I just don't think he's going to make it. He's too far gone. Well, Barry Oakley was Duane's best friend, so he rushes out to the parking lot. And he falls on his knees, and he starts to pray. And he's screaming out in this pain and tears, and he's yelling, God, just give him one more year. Just give him one more year to live. Just one more year. One more year to fill his dreams and play his music. And he was out there for about 20 minutes, and all at once the doctor comes out, and he says, look, I don't know how to tell you guys this, but he's going to make it.
Whoa.
So he survived. Now, this was, I believe, October 21st, 1970. And 1 year to the day, Duane Allman was killed in a motorcycle accident. Exactly 1 year to the day that Barry Oakley asked for that one more year.
All right. Some people would say that's just coincidence. I'm going to say it's super freaky. Not to be Rick James on you, but it is super freaky.
I agree with you, Brian. The other thing is that 1 year and 13 days later, Barry Oakley was killed just a few hundred feet from where Duane Allman was in another motorcycle accident. Whoa. Duane Allman was 24 when he died. Barry Oakley was 24 when he died.
Didn't both of them run into the side of another vehicle? I think one of them ran into the side of a bus.
Well, that was Barry Oakley. He smashed right into the side of a bus. He got up. He was walking around. He refused to go to the hospital. And then when he started going into convulsions later that night, they rushed him in and he died while he was in the hospital. Duane hit a truck that had a wrecking ball on the back of it. And when he hit it, the motorcycle flew up in the air and fell down upon him. And even though they rushed him to the hospital, there was not anything they could do. So, you know, you have these two. Now, the odd thing, and I'm still working on this, this is really going to freak you out. When Duane Allman died, they didn't bury him.
What'd they do with him?
Well, they kept him in storage. And when Barry Oakley died, they buried them both together at the same time.
Like somebody knew that Barry was coming soon? That's something you got to keep working on.
The strangest thing, and I've actually asked some people within the band, and they said, well, you know, there was some legal issues, you know, but that sounds odd.
Yeah.
How do you keep somebody's body in storage, you know, for a year? And I think his daughter, Dwayne's daughter, wrote about it in her book that just came out, and maybe last year, but she mentioned that, you know, that he wasn't buried and they buried them both together. And I think, wow, that is just a, you know, strange story, you know, as you do that. So the Allman Brothers sort of lifted this thing. And the other thing is they learned to play they went to Rose Hill Cemetery at night, this beautiful cemetery in Macon, Georgia, and they'd bring their guitars and they would play in this cemetery and they would write songs that it's going to make them famous. And if you've been to Rose Hill Cemetery, you'll see Little Martha's grave. You'll see Elizabeth Reed's grave. And, you know, that's strange because Robert Johnson, going back to the myth, he claimed that he was taught to play the guitar by the devil in graveyards at night.
Whoa.
So the Allman Brothers loved Robert Johnson. So they followed the little mystique. And then, you know, they had the untimely deaths of what was probably released there, but that was strange. And when Lynyrd Skynyrd came along, they loved the Allman Brothers. And a matter of fact, Freebird was written in honor of Dwayne Allman.
Okay.
And that's where the song comes in. Yeah. It's where it has the slide guitar part to start it off to the front. So it was in honor of him. And, you know, when you take a look at the plane crash and so many bad things. I mean, they got the plane from Aerosmith, and they leased it, and they flew it, and had engine problem on the way to South Carolina to do a show. And
right.
A lot of them had decided they weren't going to be back on the plane. They were going to fly commercial. And one of the background singers, Joe Billingsley, actually called Alan Collins and said, look, I had a dream last night. This plane's going to crash. Don't get on the plane. And Cassie Gaines was terrified, so she asked Ronnie Van Zant if it would be all right for her to ride with the roadies in an equipment truck all the way to Louisiana to their next show. And he told her, he said, Cassie, when your time's up, it's up. It doesn't matter where you are. And Whoa. He convinced her to get on the plane. And when they got on the plane, you know, of course she was killed. Ronnie Van Zant was killed. And as you look, Steve Gaines was killed. Their manager was killed. And, you know, it was a terrible end to an up-and-coming band because they sort of went down a little on their album releases, but when Street Survivors came out, it was a great album. And if you remember the album, they're standing there.
Yeah, in front of flames.
Oh, yeah. Steve Gaines has got his eyes closed and there's flames, you know, just engulfing him. And it really was bad for the family. So they did the black album cover. And they did that. And, you know, sometimes you talk about obsessed fans. Did you know that someone tried to steal Ronnie Van Zant's body in Jacksonville, Florida, in a cemetery?
I did not know that. People are nuts.
They are, and it's even worse because they had broken into the cemetery in Jacksonville, Florida, and they had opened up Stephen Gaines' grave, and they didn't get to the coffin. He was cremated, and they spilled some of his ashes, but they had pulled out Ronnie's coffin. So they had to take his body and rebury him in another cemetery and put concrete on top of it to keep people from getting there. Now, here's another urban legend. Why did they do it? And the answer was, it was a bet to see if he was buried wearing his Neil Young t-shirt.
Oh, jeez.
Now, is that not ghoulish?
That is very ghoulish. Sam, you had a quick question?
Yeah, Gary, you brought up great albums. Can you settle this debate for me? You can be the moderator if you so choose. Led Zeppelin had 9 studio albums, and I got into almost a knockdown, drag-out brawl over which one was the best album. I'll take Led Zeppelin 2, 8 Days of the Week. I get Whole Lot of Love, The Lemon Song, Heartbreaker, Ramble On, Bring It On Home. Do you have a favorite Led Zeppelin studio album?
Oh, my gosh. You know what I want to say? It's between 2 and 4.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, you're half right.
There he goes. Well, then, listen.
And, you know, now I loved the first album, you know. I mean, when I heard the first Zeppelin album, it was amazing. And it changed everything because you had, you know, Plant's voice and Jimmy Page's guitar playing. And Led Zeppelin II came out was fat. It was probably the best really British rock album I'd ever heard. And a whole lot of love. I mean, my gosh, you know, and it was just incredible, that album. And I had to listen to Led Zeppelin IV for a while. But I got to tell you, when I listen to Four Sticks, I get the eeriest feeling on that song. I don't know. It just like it sort of takes you somewhere else.
Well, we could spend a whole hour just talking about Led Zeppelin. Unfortunately, yeah. Our time is short, but we got to talk again. People need to go to rgarypatterson.com or follow you on Facebook at r.gary.patterson and go get the books. Take a Walk on the Dark Side, Rock and Roll Myths, Legends, and Curses, The Walrus Was Paul, and Hellhounds on Their Trail. All the books by R. Gary Patterson. This is fascinating stuff. Thank you for taking time on New Year's Day. We'll talk again really soon.
Oh, Brian, looking forward to it. Next time we'll talk about Baleskin House burning.
Sounds good. Thanks, Gary. Happy New Year.
Take care.
That's R. Gary Patterson. rgarypatterson.com is the website, and R. Gary Patterson on Facebook. Go and pick these up. The stories are fascinating. If you are a rock and roll fan at all, you're the hair will stand up on the back of your neck. It's Brian Noonan in for Rokon and Anna DeVlantes. They will be back on Monday. All right, normally, I don't see this woman until Sunday nights at 8 o'clock, but we've been gone on Sunday nights, and she's been gone, so it is nice to welcome Karen Conti into the studio. She is WGN's legal expert. I get to share the mic with her on Sunday nights, as I said, from 8 to 9, which is always fun. Welcome back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to everybody.
I don't even know where to start because we have so much to get to, but
lots of stuff.
There is a lot of stuff, but I know you have been hard at work when you're not vacationing in some sun-drenched beach or you're not hobnobbing with the powerful or you're not litigating some sort of important legal matter. You have been hard at work creating a year-end review. Would that be accurate?
Yes, that's accurate.
All right. So before we get into the big stories, let's do that because you've been working hard on it. So let's explain to everybody what it
is. Well, it's a little poem that I created, and it kind of recaps the year's news stories, some of them legal, many of them legal and some of them not. But this is like an audience participation. So I would ask maybe if David Jennings and Sam and you will have to fill in the blanks to see how you do on the news stories. And I assume you're going to do really well.
Do we have to do it in some sort of iambic pentameter or meter?
No, it's going to be very easy. I'll just follow my lead.
All right.
And Shanta, I don't know if you have any music for me. You have some music?
Oh, okay. She does. All
so right. Just a little background music to kind of put us in the spirit. Ready?
Well, you really produced this. No?
All right. Here we go. 'Twas the first day of January, and from the Magnificent Mile, I was just joining Brian at 7:20 on the dial. As the year winds down, and we assess the whole scene, we reflect on the events of 2015.
Okay.
There were tragedies and deaths and some happy events. I'll review them with help from you at GN. I'm going to give you a verse, and then I'll ask you, my friends, to fill in the blanks to make it rhyme at the end.
Oh.
Ready?
We got a rhyme, Sam. David, you ready?
Uh-huh.
This is where we see how Dr. Seussian you are. In June, the Supreme Court wrote an opinion that said, now same-sex partners could legally...
Wed.
Med.
But one clerk from Kentucky thought she was exempt. She served time in jail after being held in...
Contempt.
At a Charleston church, a mass shooting took place. The motive, they say, was all about...
Race.
The Confederate flag, does it mean bravery or the shameful reminder of the days we had?
Slavery.
In sports, there's Tom Brady, who fooled the NFL when his footballs were not as firm as his model wife named...
Giselle.
Oh, very nice.
He got a 4-day suspension, which he fought with zeal. He ultimately got it reversed on...
Appeal.
The fight of the century, we watched it together. Beating out Pacquiao was Floyd...
Mayweather.
The Cubs gave it a go. There were prayers and big bets. In the end, we were sad when they lost to the
Mets.
The curse of the goat, it continues, I fear. As we've said for a century, we'll win it
next year.
Patrick Kane was accused of going too far, not on the ice, but with a girl he met in a
bar.
The girl's motives were challenged. Kaner continues to play. It's hard to charge someone with rape with no
DNA.
I was like, hearsay, go away. I don't know.
At Love Ranch in Nevada, the news said, and I quote him, a basketball star found unconscious, his name
Lamar Odom.
a decathlete from the past, wore a dress he looked great in. Bruce Jenner made news when he said, "Call me
Caitlin."
After 54 years of bad nation relations, we now will get to visit Cuba when we go on
vacations.
A lion was killed. The uproar, it was lethal. When a dentist from the Midwest killed a lion named
Cecil.
Bill Cosby's career slid. He's now known as a thug. His female accusers claim they were
drugged.
40 women came forward. The group is so large. At last, just this week, he was finally
charged.
Ashley Madison was hacked. Lots of secrets unburied, exposing the daters who were already
married.
He lost weight and for years was Subway's paid parrot. He pled guilty to sex crimes. We know him as
Jared.
Hillary Clinton was exposed by the press for improper use of her email
address.
Hillary testified before a congressional posse about her Secretary of State handling of the attack in
Benghazi.
The race for the president is sure on full speed. On the Democrat side, Hillary's in the
lead.
The Republican race, we have watched them all stump. The biggest, of course, is our friend
Donald Trump.
Some think he's a racist, that he lies without blinking. Some believe he's just saying what everyone's
thinking.
Obama made a deal, and that deal was sure panned. No one liked the nuclear pact that U.S. made with
Iran.
Iran. We got to rhyme it, David.
You got to rhyme it. Got to stretch it a little.
Iran.
The drug lord El Chapo has not yet been found when he escaped from his prison cell and fled underground.
With a pound.
The year's biggest news had to do with the crisis of the terrorist group, which we know as
ISIL.
In Paris, terrorists killed, leaving a magazine office in ruins, and all because workers drew religious
cartoons.
And in Paris again, 5 weeks back, 130 were killed in a large-scale
attack.
When terrorists strike and everyone flees, must the U.S. take in
refugees?
Oh, very good.
In our second city, the crime never stops, but the focus this year was on force by the
cops.
Laquan McDonald, the issue was hot. The world watched the dash cam 16 times he was
shot.
As he walked down the street with a small pocket knife, did that justify the cop taking his
life?
There were numerous protests and Michigan Avenue marches. Why did it take 13 months to bring
charges?
The police chief was fired. 'Twas the news of the nation. Some are now calling for Rahm's
resignation.
Wow.
This year there were deaths.
That was good. That was a good one.
Thank you. This year there were deaths. Old age is a thief. We lost the great actor, Omar
Sharif.
And Mira, the comedian, Ben Stiller's her boy. Mr. Spock left our galaxy. That's Leonard
Nimoy.
The blues great B.B. King, actress Maureen O'Hara, and the great baseball catcher, goodbye Yogi
Berra.
Minnie Minosa, a White Sox who's who, and our own Cub Ernie Banks, who said, today let's
play two.
As the new year begins and my poem comes to an end, I want to thank all who tune in to GN. And thank you to Brian for our weekly date to talk about law on Sundays at 8. And I heard Brian exclaim with a toast of dark ale, Happy New Year, and Karen, please keep me out of jail.
That's true.
Very good.
Nicely
right.
done.
I like it.
Good job,
listen,
guys.
If it was nothing else, we proved we can rhyme at a third grade level. So I am excited about
I'd
that.
I'd say fourth grade,
all
but
right.
you know.
No, no. Resignation and a rhyme, that
resignation
is
was
that's
good.
High school level.
All right. Listen, whatever you want to do to make us feel better. That was Karen Conti's big year-end poem. Karen is here. We're going to talk about some of the big legal stories. And if you have a couple legal questions, because we're not here on the net. I don't think we're back till February on Sunday nights because the Blackhawks
right.
are the Blackhawks decided they wanted to play all their games on Sunday night this year. I don't know, but that's fine. So Karen's here, 312-981-7200. Did you get in some trouble over the holidays? You need to talk to our legal expert, 312-981-7200. The phones are already ringing. A lot of people had issues over Christmas. You can only imagine. All right, so Karen Conti's here. We'll talk more with Karen on the other side. It's WGN. Brian Noonan in for Ro Khan and Anna DeVellantes. They will be back on Monday. Karen Conti is in the studio with me. We just heard Karen's great big year-end poem, and to prove that we can rhyme, we know how to rhyme. We should bust a rhyme, Sam. That's what we should have done. Should have busted a rhyme.
Should have done it in rap. Maybe next year.
Next year, you drop some beats.
That's right.
Some sick beats, as Taylor Swift likes to say. But we're also going to talk about some of the big legal stories that are happening right now. And if you have a question for Karen, 312-981-7200, that's how you get a hold of us. You can send those in on text as well as on the phone. So, all right, where do we start? I don't know if we start with affluenza. I don't know if we start with Cosby or one of the myriad of other things. Anita Alvarez saying, oh, yeah, we'd like some help on the before the Justice Department comes in. Where would you like to start?
Let's start with Cosby. Let's start at the bottom.
Yeah. Now, so we know now the statute of limitations on this case was about to run out.
That's right.
12 years statute of limitations. This is an accuser who filed the complaint. You know, a lot of times with these Cosby things, people are saying, why didn't they come forward when it happened? This woman came forward immediately when it happened. They decided not to prosecute. She pressed a civil case, and that was settled by Cosby. And now a new prosecutor is in Pennsylvania, looked at it and said, yeah, I think we can bring some charges. Am I accurate on that?
Yeah, you're accurate. And, you know, what I have to say about this is, you know, prosecutorial discretion is very great and very broad. And, you know, prosecutors have an obligation to bring cases that they can win.
Right.
Not just that they think there's guilt, that they can prove beyond a reasonable doubt, which is different than he just did it. So, you know, but with all of this mounting pressure, I mean, this is an international news story that spans, what, 40 years.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the prosecutor, you know, not to give him or her bad, you know, intentions or anything, but someone had to do something about this. And this was a fact case. The facts in this case were pretty good because she did come forward right away,
right,
as opposed to what a lot of the women did. It wasn't one of those cases where some of these women wanted to be celebrities and they wanted to go into acting and he was kind of bringing them along and then having sex with them. And this was a case of just, I think, you know, probably a good fact pattern for a prosecution. But again, these things are very hard to prove. And beyond a reasonable doubt is a very high standard. And, you know, it's going to be defended vigorously. And let's not be surprised if he walks. I'm saying that because it may not be that all of these facts are going to be brought into a jury, meaning all of these women are not going to get to testify that they, too, had it happen to them.
Right.
That's not always admissible. And we'll see what this judge does with all that. But it generally doesn't come in.
Now, do you think that part of the charges being brought now by this new prosecutor is because his deposition became public for some of the other charges and these other women that have come up? Once that deposition became public, a lot of the accusations in that deposition matched the accusations that these other women were making.
I do think that helped. And what helps here is that he testified that, yes, he did have the drugs. Yes, he did take the drugs and she took the drugs or the other woman took the drugs and we did have sex. So that's the only thing that needs to be proven now from a prosecutorial standpoint is, was it consensual or was it not consensual?
How hard is that to prove?
I mean, that's hard. That's always a very difficult thing to do. And, you know, they're going to say this woman had a drink, she had drugs, she took them, she didn't know what she was doing. Of course she consented. You know, the prosecution is going to say, how could she consent? She was under the influence of serious drugs that are mind-altering and do not allow you to put up a fight. So again, but there's you even hear this now with all, I had this discussion this weekend, with all 40 women, I still hear people saying, they're just doing it for the money, or
yeah,
why didn't they come forward, or what, you know, and so, you know, you're going to get a jury of people, not that who don't know anything about the case, but who are going to have an open mind. The prosecution and the defense are both going to question them. They're going to say, we're going to keep our mind open. And, you know, these are always very difficult cases to prove.
Is there an element of sexism going on here? Because you've made the point, a man says something, it's usually believed. A woman says something, and most of these women said something when the event took place. And everybody kind of looked at them and went, sure, honey. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. No, I do think there's sexism. And, you know, just if you were walking down the street, right, and someone accosted you and held you up, no prosecutor would say to you, did you consent to that strong-armed robbery?
Right.
You know, but again, you know, whether it's consensual or not, that there is a fine line there in some cases.
Sure.
Okay. In some cases where you have date rape, where a woman is saying no, but she really means yes, and there's a question about it. Here, there's such a pattern in practice. And, you know, I think what we're understanding more now, David, to answer your question, is that people like Bill Cosby, if he is in fact guilty, you know, people do this who are important. People like Jared, people who have money, people who have power, like Michael Jackson, maybe, you know, do these things, and we can't put them on a pedestal. They are as guilty as anybody else, right. And we have to listen to people who come forward and say these things.
But his public persona was that of, he was America's
of
dad.
Course. And, you know, John Wayne Gacy was an upstanding man in the community before they found out he buried 33 boys in his house. So,
yeah.
You know, we have to understand that there are people who are dangerous that walk amongst us. And I don't mean this as an overly, let's be afraid of everyone, but just because, you know, someone has a good persona doesn't mean that they're not a rapist.
Right.
That's the way it is.
So you said you think he's going to walk because this is just very hard.
I didn't say he's going
to
walk.
Well, you said you think he might.
I think everyone's going, oh, he's going to be prosecuted and convicted, and that's what we're done now. I don't know. I think this is still a hard case to prove.
So he went in and he went through the preliminary phases. He went
right.
in to the police station. He was booked as part of the thing. He paid his bail. Now he's out. He's got they haven't set a trial date, but they've set a preliminary hearing date. What's that process like?
Well, they're going to probably present some evidence. I don't know exactly how the process works in Pennsylvania, but he was at the arraignment. He pled not guilty, which was intended and, you know, we expected. But there's going to be some preliminary hearing, probably on some issues as to what is going to be admissible here. That's a really big question. If I were Cosby's attorney, defense attorney, I would want to know, are they going to get to include all that evidence? Because if they do, I'm in trouble. Okay.
All the evidence, meaning the
yes.
other women's testimonies?
If it's kept out, which a lot of the courts will do because they want to focus on what happened here, not what happened 40 years ago, not right. what happened 20 years ago, not what happened in another state, but right here with this woman, I might plead him guilty to something if all that evidence comes in. Right. If it doesn't, then I might mount my defense. And okay. that defense might be, and I would guess, that he's going to be the doddering old man. You saw him come to court.
Boy,
he looked
I said
like
this
he was
yesterday.
100 years old. He could barely hear the judge. Excuse me.
And couldn't see.
Yeah.
But 3 weeks ago, he seemed very
spry.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's always been a defense. And you see that with our politicians who come to court with a cane and all that, because you want to have a little bit of sympathy with a potential juror and potential judge.
Now, does it make it harder, too, because it's a 12-year-old case? It's running up right on the end of the statute of limitations. Does time play into it at all?
Terrible for the prosecution. Okay. Because remember, beyond reasonable doubt, they're going to question her like crazy. Every time she's told this story, I don't know how many times she has told it, but they're going to find every time she's told it. And right. they're going to tweak it a little bit. And they're going to say, but you said something different. And you said something a little bit different. Let me tell you this. If you tell me what you did yesterday from 9 to 10, and I asked you three more times, it will be different every time you tell me, even though you're
right.
telling me the truth. And that's what a good lawyer does. A good lawyer takes apart the words and makes it look like the person is either lying, not remembering, or has a motive to say something that's not true.
Well, now that you're back, people were going to have questions. Can
okay.
you stick around a little
sure.
bit after the news? All right, because I want to talk to you about this affluenza case and the potential for a change of venue in the Van Dyke trial.
Sure.
Which is, so we'll talk to Karen Conti. She is here. How can people get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
All right, more with Karen. And it's the Roe Con Show with Anna DeVlantes. I'm Brian Noonan in for Roe today. He'll be back on Monday after his big holiday break. Karen Conti is in the studio as well. Because we haven't had a Sunday night together in a while, she was nice enough to come in, share her year-end poem, and answer your questions at 312-981-7200, because there have been a lot of big legal stories, and I was not rude enough to call you while you were on vacation. I know some other hosts will call you and disrupt your Mexican siesta, but not me. I figured I'd wait to get you back in the studio in person. All right, let's go back real quick to Bill Cosby, because somebody had a question on the text. You had mentioned that it's hard with evidence. Are they going to be able to bring in all the things from the past? And the texter wanted to know, doesn't the prosecution need to have all of those admitted to set up a pattern of behavior?
You know, you would think yes. What more probative, meaning, you know, important, mm-hmm. proving guilt or innocence, what evidence would there be than he had done it before, right? Like, if he just right. did it once, we'd all say, he did it once, really? But the law is very complicated when it comes to this, and it's different from state to state. And generally speaking, when you're talking about one particular situation. Whether someone's done it in the past is not relevant. Now, if he had a criminal conviction or something like that, that could come in. There are some exceptions to this rule.
Okay.
The prosecution is going to get very creative and is going to try to get that evidence in to show that he had an MO to do this. But the judge is going to really probably rein it in. So my guess is going to be that maybe some of it's going to come in, but it's not going to be 50 women parading on the witness stand. It's just not going to be a circus
right.
like that. The judge is not going to let it because the judge has to focus on what happened here 12 years ago. And one more thing I want to say, Brian, about reasonable doubt. You know, if I were a defense lawyer, I'd say my argument would be first and foremost, they must have had a reasonable doubt because they didn't bring charges for 12 years.
Yeah.
How do you now have, you know, no reasonable doubts?
So yeah, because they decided not to prosecute the first time.
Right.
So there must have been something.
Right.
All right. Yeah, that's would be the first thing, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And then who answers that? Because can you call the former prosecutor and say this is, you know?
I think what you do in closing argument, you just say, listen, this happened 12 years ago. You can figure out, jury, why wasn't this prosecuted early on? She came forward early on. I mean, I don't know. You don't even need the evidence. You can
right.
just tell the jury that they can consider the fact that the prosecutors themselves took 12 years to bring this to justice. And it's not fair to Bill Cosby to have to defend after all these years. I'm making the argument for Cosby, of course. But, I think that can be a very strong and potent argument.
Can the fact that he settled a civil suit be brought into
no.
a criminal case? It cannot.
No,
none
of that's going to be brought in.
Oh, wow.
Now,
okay.
if there's testimony in a deposition, the jury will get to maybe hear some of that, but they won't know why there was a deposition. They will just hear that it was sworn testimony. They will not know that there was a lawsuit. They will not know there was a settlement. It's completely irrelevant to this inquiry.
Really? Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Now, see,
because civil liability is different. Remember OJ,
right? Sure.
OJ got whipped for, $20 million or whatever it was, but he walked free from a prosecutorial standpoint.
Right.
So one burden of proof is different than the other.
Okay. All right. Let's turn our attention to this punk scumbag Ethan Couch, the affluenza kid who fled the country, jumped out on probation after killing four people. The judge in Texas decided that instead of sending him to jail, which is what the prosecution wanted, she would give him 10 years probation. Part of that probation was to stay away from liquor. A YouTube video came out which purportedly showed that he was around liquor. He was drinking. Then he and his mom disappeared. Well, they were dumb. They called Domino's. The marshals found him. She was extradited. He is now fighting extradition, and his deportation from Mexico may be delayed because his attorney, who was based in Texas, is saying that Mexico may have messed with his human rights.
Yeah. Well, here's the big picture. The big picture is they're going to mess around with his human rights. They're going to do all the stuff they're going to do, and he's still going to be sent back. There's
okay.
no question he will be sent back unless he seeks asylum. You know, that's the kind of thing where let's just say that someone was subject to the death penalty here. And let's say Mexico didn't have a death penalty for that crime. Mexico could give him asylum saying you would be unreasonably persecuted, so we're going to protect your rights. Nothing like that happened here. This
okay.
is not that kind of case. So Mexico, under our treaties, really does have to honor our extradition. And there might be some legal machinations. But the big picture is this. How stupid is this for this kid to make these arguments? Because you know what? He's going to end up back in court.
Right.
He's going to end up in front of a judge who's
going
to
say... Will he be going in front of the same judge?
No. That judge did not run again, actually. Now,
oh,
I don't know if
okay.
it was because she was going to lose or she chose another job, but it's going to be another judge. And what would you think as a judge? Now,
ooh.
This is a kid who got a break, made national news. He violated his probation. He fled the jurisdiction. And then he started to make stupid legal arguments that cost probably in the millions of dollars when this is all done to get him back to the country. To stand up for what he's doing. So
right.
I have to say this is not a good move.
No.
I have a question, Karen.
Yes, David.
The attorneys who came up with the affluenza defense, are they getting a lot of high fives because it worked from their colleagues, or are they getting a lot of cold shoulders from people who are just frankly nauseated by what they did?
Well, you have to understand from a legal standpoint, lawyers who come up with creative arguments and do a good job for their clients.
It's a good thing.
Are usually, we like to see lawyers do a good job. So I know it's perverse to think that this kid's out and maybe you don't like the result. But from a lawyer standpoint, it's a good creative move. I don't know if it's good for a lawyer's reputation long term. I would have to say this. Maybe you don't like the lawyer who created that defense. But if your kid were accused
right.
and sitting in court, who would you hire?
Yeah,
you hire that hire that guy. But here's the other part, and just I'm not going to give this judge a lot of leeway here, but 10 years probation is longer than the child, you know, to a point of emancipation.
Yeah, so, and it was a juvenile court.
So it was a juvenile court. So if they had sentenced him, he would have had to, you know, he would have spent a couple years in jail. He would have been out. And I think that the judge was trying to argue that this gave her a longer period of time to monitor his behavior, meaning 10 years.
Right.
So the probationary period was something that had more teeth in a way than putting him in jail.
Okay.
So I would guess that I'm just giving the judge a little bit more credibility than maybe she deserves.
One of the texters wanted to know, in your opinion, is affluenza truly reasonable defense?
Would
Is it something you'd have come up with?
No, well, it's not in the you know, the psychologist, you know, don't buy into it. It's not like depression.
Even the one who used the term in court is now saying, well, that wasn't.
I mean, just because you use a term doesn't mean it means anything. But I think the argument, you know, that this child had no boundaries, and you know what, there might be something to that, because if you look at that mother who brought that kid down there,
right?
I mean, you got to say that. That's not good parenting.
to
the very least, that's not good parenting, okay? So maybe there is some idea that this child has been coddled, and as a result, he knows no boundaries. I don't know that you excuse someone's behavior because of that, because he's dangerous.
Yeah.
There is a limit on what they can do to the mother, correct? There's not a whole lot they can do to her?
Yeah. I mean, the charges were something I never really heard of. It was like blocking an apprehension or something. And they're talking about 2 to 10 years. My guess is she's probably getting hit with a felony, maybe serve a little bit of time. But they can't do a huge amount. This is not a big, big crime.
Because once they caught the kid, they don't really need the mom anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's...
Although, they, you know, I could see they're going to want a prosecutor because this got international news coverage.
Yeah.
And she may be, you know, people may think she's culpable here of this whole thing. And
well,
you know,
it would lend credence to that argument, like you said, that he has no boundaries if the mom helps him go on the lam and is down there with him.
And the sheriff also indicated that they literally had a going away party for the kid right before they took off.
This is just not going to, I mean, all of this is going to be a prosecution's dream.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, so they had asked for, I think, 10 years in prison originally. So they finally get him back in court. Can the prosecution ask for more? How is that going to work? And is the judge, like you said, the judge isn't going to be happy no matter what judge it is. How much discretion do they have to go, you know what, we're going to tack a little on just because you're a jerk?
Well, because it's just a violation of probation, okay, they go back to what it could have been.
Okay.
So if it was 10 years, and I think that was what they were talking about, that's what the prosecution had requested, and I think the law did allow for that, then that's what we're talking about, but probably a maximum of 10 years.
Yeah, I'm looking at here. They say he could get up to 100 for the first offense of skipping, 120 days in adult jail, followed by 10 years probation. If he violates probation again, he could face up to 10 years in prison per death. So up to 40 years in prison.
Yeah, and that's probably excessive.
He'd never get.
Sometimes
there,
you read the laws, and I think sometimes the journalists will read and add them all together, and you don't always get to do that. I would say a 10-year sentence, and maybe a little bit for the fleeing the jurisdiction, but we're not talking about 40 years in jail.
Okay. Mary has a question. We're going to get to Mary's question. And if you have a question for Karen Conti, 312-981-7200. People are probably a little caught off guard. They didn't know you were going to be here until I started talking to them at 3 o'clock. So if they need to get a hold of you during the week, how can they do that?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right. More with Karen on the other side, 720 WGN. All right. Karen Conti is in the studio. We're talking about big legal stories. We're answering your legal questions at 312-981-7200. Now, Mary's been hanging on for a while. Hi, Mary. Welcome to WGN. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I have a will to which I added a codicil to change my executor. Now I want to remove a beneficiary and change division of my small estate. Can I do this with another codicil?
You want to change what?
Okay, I have a will to which I added a codicil.
No, I understand that. You had changed the executor. Now what do you want to do?
I want to remove a beneficiary who died and change division of my small estate.
Division of your small estate. I'm not sure what that means, but...
Well, it means I don't have a lot of money, you know
Okay, so, you know, I can't answer your question because I don't know exactly what you're saying you want to change. You can usually change things through a codicil, but you also have to make sure that that is signed and witnessed just as if your will was signed and witnessed. And a lot of people don't know that. So maybe you have to make
that.
Okay, so
I
you
had
have
it
to make
notarized
sure.
And everything.
And the only problem with that, Mary, I see is that when you start changing things over and over again, it becomes very confusing. And sometimes if you're not a lawyer and you don't know how to read these things, you might have different provisions that are conflicting.
Ooh.
Okay. And when things conflict, then if someone who reads this at the end of the day, let's just say there's some kind of will contest, and probably there wouldn't be, but if there were, there would be a question as to what it really means. So the answer to your question is to be careful. You probably should go back to a lawyer and have that lawyer just make the change. But again, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking as far as how substantial that change is.
In other words, there's no limit to, this is a stupid, there's no limit to how many codicils I can put on there.
No,
and then,
no.
Okay, all right.
No.
That was the main thing. Okay.
Okay,
right.
Mary.
Good luck, Mary. Good Happy luck. New Year. Take care. This one came in from a texter in the 708. I braked hard for a yellow light and got rear-ended by a police car. The officer was enraged, yanked open my door and grabbed me. I'll read it a little more dramatic. I told him he was under citizen's arrest for battery. I don't think that's a good move. He became even angrier and claimed I changed lanes, causing the accident. I was charged with reckless driving. What they don't know is that I have it all on dash cam, proving I never changed lanes. Was I required to show them before they charged me? I have court in Bridgeview in 3 weeks.
This is interesting. The first thing is that if you are rear-ended, it's always the person who rear-ends you fault,
right.
You know, because that person was following too closely.
Right.
Okay, so even if you're one of those idiot drivers that rides your brake while going 75 miles an hour on the Eisenhower.
Don't look at me.
Yeah, no,
I'm the guy behind him.
And if you run into him and you say, well, it's his fault. He slammed on the brakes. You were going too fast for the
right.
conditions and following too closely. So this police officer is going nowhere with this charge. But no, you had no obligation to show that video cam to the dash cam to the cop, and I think you should bring it to the courthouse, and when trial comes, you're going to present that. Make sure you can get it into the courthouse, because there are rules about bringing certain things in. You want to make sure that you have it, and you make sure you have it if you're going to put it on a computer, that you can actually bring the computer into the
okay.
courthouse, because there are rules about that. And I think that's a terrible situation. I mean,
yeah,
why the cop did that, I don't know. That doesn't sound good if that's what happened.
No, just
angry. He was angry and he drags you out of the car. That's not good. That's not good.
Yeah, because maybe he wasn't paying attention. We don't
that's
know.
Right.
But why does anybody rear-end anybody? You're not paying attention or somebody stops, but you're following too close. Like you said, it's always that person's fault.
Yep.
All right, Nancy's been hanging on. She has a custody question for you, Karen.
Okay.
Hi, Nancy. Happy New Year. Hi, Nancy. I'll put Nancy back on hold. Sean, do you want to see if Nancy is still there? Maybe she was in custody. Maybe that's the question.
Maybe that's it.
Maybe that's it.
She used her last dime. I guess it's more than a dime now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know. How do you get that call? Is she there? Is she not? Oh, maybe she's calling back. So all right, now let's talk real quick about, while we're waiting for Nancy
sure.
to come back, the Van Dyke trial.
Yep.
The officer who shot Laquan McDonald. There was talk at first about maybe trying to get a change of venue, but that seemed to have settled down a little bit after he went in and entered his plea. I was talking with somebody the other day, and they said, in this day and age, with the amount of exposure that the video got and the internet and everything else, a change of venue means nothing anymore, really.
It's kind of true. And what used to be, when you had a case that was a heater case, you would actually, as a defense lawyer, if you wanted to move it to another jurisdiction, you'd have to go out and take polls. And you'd have to take polls. Who thinks that Drew Peterson is guilty? And you come to court and you say, I polled 2,000 people and 90% of them said he killed both wives. And so you present that to the judge and you say, that's what the people in Bowling Brook think. And so therefore, mm-hmm. we have to move it to somewhere else. You're right, though, because this is a national story. It's an international story. So, and generally speaking, it's expensive to move it to another venue, number one.
Right.
And number two, you can cure some of these problems through the process of jury selection. And that's how the judges think of it. They think, all right, we don't need to have 12 jurors who don't know anything about the case, because those people would be ostriches with their head
yeah.
in the sand, right? But we have to just say, you've heard some stuff about the case. Are you willing to be open-minded? Have you made a decision yet? If the people are saying, no, I would be able to make a decision, I am open-minded, then that cures that problem of pretrial publicity in the eyes of the court.
How difficult is that for both sides, the attorneys on the prosecution and the defense, when you're going through voir dire? That's the right term, right?
Yes.
When you're talking,
yep.
Look at me, all look legal.
At you.
It's all
yep.
the years we've spent Sunday nights together. I picks things up. When you're going through that, and you can say to any number of prospective jurors, can you be open-minded? And they can say, oh, yeah, sure, I can be open-minded. But they may have already made up their mind. How do you
yeah.
discern that?
It's a hard one. You know, and there's people who are chosen, who are jury selectors who look at body language. You know, people nod and then they're shaking their head or they say things that are color words that you say. And I think they already did make up their mind. You know, I like to think that people are truthful. And there are plenty of people, by the way, who will say to you, no, I can't be fair and honest. I've even been in civil cases that have no publicity whatsoever where someone says, listen, I don't think plaintiffs should get money in personal injury cases. I think that's wrong, and I would never be fair to you. And so you say, well,
thank you, you've been excused.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Some people do that on purpose to get out of jury duty, of course.
I did it once, maybe, allegedly, back when I was young.
Statute has run.
Yes, it has.
All right.
All right, let's get it. Nancy is back. Nancy,
okay.
Nancy with the custody question. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
We're well, thanks.
My daughter had a baby out of wedlock. The father is in and out of the scene. The baby is being raised by the paternal grandparents because they, in fact, raised the father. His father was in jail for rape, and his mother's a schizophrenic. I know, it sounds like a Jerry Springer show.
Wow.
Anyway, my daughter has some intellectual and some emotional shortfalls. And they had the baby 18 months ago, and the baby is living with the paternal grandparents. They have since thrown the father out. I am just wondering if we should leave well enough alone while my daughter gets her ducks in a row. I'm talking about a custody battle. I don't want to raise any custody issues until or if there is an insistence on their part.
I know we're in a little bit of a hurry. This is a touchy situation. This is a judgment call that you're going to have to make from a standpoint of what's best for this child. But just
right.
know that your daughter and the father, no matter who they are or what problems they have the first rights as biological parents to have custody and care of that child. Okay. So
okay.
if
yes.
push comes to shove, she could walk over there with the police officer. I'm being dramatic about it and say, that's my
yes.
child and I'm going to take that child back. And if that's something uh-huh. that you want to do, you know, that's something that you have to plan for and do. But if the child's being taken care of, that's something that you are going to have to make a decision about. But, you know, mm-hmm. they may at some point decide they want custody and they're mm-hmm. going to say that they want guardianship or custody of that child. So you might be in a battle in any event. My best advice right. is stay friendly with that family if you can. Make sure you get to
yes.
see that child. Make sure your daughter gets to spend time. And hopefully you can work it out as a family. That's a real optimistic bit of advice.
Thank you.
All right.
That's exactly what I was thinking, too.
Good luck.
All right, good luck, Nancy. Happy New Year. Speaking of that, real quick, January 1st has come. The custody laws have changed in Illinois. You were part of writing that. Real quick, can you explain the difference? It's not going to be support anymore?
No, we're not going to call it custody anymore. We're calling it parental responsibilities and parenting time. So we're taking away some of the bad color words here, and visitation is not a word anymore. It's parenting time. And there's going to be some presumptions of spending time with different parents. It's all very good. It's not going to change the law completely, but it's going to change the semantics and the words, which I think are going to start to change the way people view children. Children are not objects to be, you know, brought back and forth.
Right.
It's the sharing of responsibilities and time.
All right. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough for coming in today. Happy New Year.
Happy
it's
New
great
Year
to see
everybody.
You. It's been a few weeks. We'll be back at some point on Sunday nights, I think in February. On Wednesday mornings, people can hear you with Steve Cochran at
about 6:40.
6:40?
Yeah, yep.
I almost said 5:40. I knew that was too early
That's
for
too
you.
Early.
That's too early. Well, Happy New Year.
Happy
Thanks
New Year
for coming
to everyone.
In. How can people get a hold of you in the meantime
you
if they need
you? Call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
Happy New Year. It's Brian Noonan in for Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantes. Anna and Ro, or Ro and Anna, will be back on Monday at their regular time. The holidays are over, and everything will be right as rain Monday on 720 WGN. It's been fun being here all week. New Year's Day, we all have hope as we look toward 2016. This year is going to be better. Things are going to be good for us. I wish I could know for sure if there's an edge. Well, lucky for you that Susan Rowland has come in to join me today. She's a psychic medium based here in Chicago. She does personal readings, business readings, paranormal cold case investigations. And Shonda, my wonderful producer, has worked with Susan before and said, you are going to love this woman. So she's here. Happy New Year, Susan. Thank you for coming in. Welcome. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too. And thank you for having me.
Now, I know people can call. You will do some readings for people on the phone. You can do that on the phone.
I do offer phone sessions 3 times a week. So,
nice.
Yeah, I do that.
So 312-981-7200 if you want to get in today and have Susan do a reading.
Mm-hmm.
Now, forgive me. I'll start by being honest with you. I'm skeptical, as I'm sure many people you meet are skeptical.
They are, you know, but if you're open to it, I like that. But if you're going to be a total skeptic, then I always tell people it's not going to matter.
Okay.
Okay, because, you know, to have a successful reading, you have to be open somewhat and willing. If not, you do have invisible blockers.
I like to make mine very visible so no one knows.
You mean we can lie? That's what you mean by that, right?
Well, you could lie, but you know, sometimes I'll be able to do that too. I'll be able to see right through you. Well, it's funny because when it comes to spirit and it comes to somebody who is still here presently, who hasn't passed, and I will make contact with spirit in the afterlife, they will tell me something. Their loved one will tell me something else. And trust me, I believe
you
spirit
believe
every
one?
Time. They have no cause to lie.
So when did you know or begin to sense that you had some abilities, some senses that other people might not have had?
When I was very young, about 6 years old, was a very vivid thought and memory. Up until then, I didn't know the difference, but my grandfather had passed away.
Okay.
And he passed away on December 15th. And it was right before Christmas, and I remember we were very young. I have at the time I had 2 other brothers, and I was 6, and my mother decided that we were too young, and she didn't want us to go.
Oh.
So after the funeral, it's very interesting, my mother was on top of a chair looking at some pictures, and I said to her, Mom, what are you looking at? And she said, oh, they're not for your eyes to see. And she put these pictures back into the envelope and went and put them on the tallest shelf she could. And she gets a phone call. Okay, so, of course, a 6-year-old.
Sure, you're climbing up.
And I did. And ironically, I see my grandfather lying in the casket. But he actually looked quite nice. He looked very, very, very relaxed, like he was sleeping.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, well, how could he be in there when he's here? It was a very, very hard thing because, like I said, I'm 6 years old. I did not know the difference until I saw this. So the afterlife was very real to me.
Okay.
So that was very, very real, very prevalent then. That's why I always say when there are small children and they are telling you that Grandpa so-and-so is here or Auntie so-and-so, or they can tell you what they look like and they've never met them, you better believe them.
Are kids just more open?
Yeah, because children are more innocent and they're much more pure.
Okay.
As we get older and society projects our thoughts, they get tainted.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Sure.
Okay. You get influenced.
Exactly.
Children are not. I always say, you know, animals and children are your most innocent. Animals see spirits as well. So when you see the dog barking at something...
I always say to my dogs, what are you barking at? There's nothing there.
Oh, you are mistaken. The dog sees everything. The dog, the cat. You know.
Don't know my dogs, Susan. They're kind of dopey. They may just be barking at a leaf.
No.
All right.
No. You're not giving your dog enough credit, Brian. But no, it's real. And I always say to people, you have to really be open. If you think that this is all there is, you are mistaken.
Okay.
And you are.
Well, that, so I know the right terminology.
Okay.
Do you call it powers? What do I say? Do you have, when I say your gift, how do you like to be, it referred to?
A medium is basically a filter between the afterlife and the present life.
Okay.
Okay. And I always tell people before they come to my office in Oak Brook, okay, I have an office in Oak Brook Terrace, and I tell people all the time, if you want to make contact with a loved one, think of them prior to coming.
Okay.
Because it's your energy that brings them, not mine.
Okay.
A medium just is able to tap into it.
And can you, now people will say, and you know, and I don't think that way, because I do, I do believe in other power, you know, a higher power and things.
Right.
But people will say, well, if you're a psychic medium, Can you tell me the lottery numbers?
I get that all the time.
I know. That's why I'm sure it's the dumbest question, right?
Well, you know, it's not even that. You know, listen, I've been known to win at the track many times.
Uh-oh. Are you a horse whisperer as well?
Sometimes I'm on fire and I'll see numbers and it's like, wow. But overall, you know what? It's funny. I never win for me. I've always won for others.
Well, when can you take me to the track?
I knew you were going to say
that.
Yeah,
let's go. Well,
as soon as Arlington opens, you're going to be calling me. But I don't get it all the time on that. But honestly, I will get maybe more revelations on what's around, what you shouldn't be doing, spirit. All of those type of things, you know, what you're suffering from, things that you can improve on. I can see that. I can see when something is a sensitive spot, if you've had a turmoil, relationship, family, all of that. You know, I can go into a building. I was just telling my husband, I love your building.
Oh, great. But, yeah, it's a very historic, and there's supposedly a lot of
spirits. Well, there was, because I was here October 3rd, well, 31st on Halloween.
Okay.
I was one of the team that came with Dave Olson, Paranormal
Investigator. Yes, yes, okay.
Well, and I love Hannah.
Yep.
Okay. Love Amy. I said some things that neither one told me. And they, you know, I think Amy was a little hard to prove, but she's just said, oh, my God, you hit on some points here. But I was able to see a lot of spirits walking in this building.
Okay.
And I could tell you stories about all of them at that time. So I didn't know any of the stories. I didn't know. I even went back in time with Roy Leonard's kids being here. I had no idea about that. I didn't know it was Roy's kids, ironically. I just kept seeing the kids. It was funny. Hannah told me. So there's a lot of things. But this is a very male building.
Sure.
Okay. You've got a lot of heavy male spirits in this building.
Okay.
A lot of fat guys is what she's saying.
Big, fat, dead guys wandering around.
Well.
And how many crushed spirits did you see of people who were washed out of this industry? Were there a lot of those as well?
Well, you know, it's funny because Wally Phillips came to me.
Really?
Loved him.
He was phenomenal.
Very quirky guy, though. Yeah. And let me tell you, his personality, I didn't know anything about him. He really had that real weird sense of humor, I want to say. Okay? Not everybody got his humor.
Yeah.
And what he laughed at were some really off-the-wall bizarre things.
Right.
And I see him doing ch-ch-ch-ch-ch in the hallways.
Really?
Well,
he had six shooters.
Well, I didn't know what that meant, and I told that to Hannah.
Okay.
I guess Hannah told her father, who was working here many moons ago, and he said he used to do that all the time.
Wow.
So, you know, I had talked to Hannah the day after, and she said, I went back to my father. There was a lot of stories I didn't know, and I repeated them, and my father said she's right on the money.
Susan Rowland is here. She's a psychic medium. You can find her at srowland.com or susan.rowland on Facebook. I know yesterday you asked Shonda to get my birthday.
I did.
we're going to have you do a reading on me. The lines are already jammed. 312-981-7200. Susan said she'll stay till we get kicked out of here at 7. We're going to talk to Tom for a few minutes after 6:30. All right. Susan Rowland is in studio with me. She's a psychic medium. SRowland.com is her website. And on Facebook, you can follow her at Susan.Rowland. Yesterday, Susan, I got an email from Shanta, who is producing the show today. And she said, Susan would like your birth date.
I did.
And I don't know. I didn't know why you would want my birth date other than you were sending me a card.
I'm
going to
send you flowers.
All right. That'll be lovely. So what did my birth date help you with when it came to telling me what's going on?
I like to add up the numbers, and it gives me a life path, and it gives me a little bit open door of how you really are.
Okay.
You're an 8, and what I like about it's really one of the most highest powerful life path numbers. It's pretty much, whatever you set your sights on, you do incredibly well. There's things that you do effortlessly, and you don't even have to try, and you'll do well.
Okay.
It's almost, they call it the snowball effect.
Right.
Whatever you do, you know, when you roll the snowball, it gets bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of you. Okay.
Okay.
But you're finally doing the work of your choice. And I got that. There was a lot of things that you would hem and hum about. You have a very, you're a natural, logical thinker.
Okay.
As much as you're joking, you're most serious when you joke.
Wow, you hear that, Sam? So
go ahead.
But that kind of people who've listened to me or that's kind of, you know, you could kind of say,
okay. But I'll be honest with you. you're at a place right now when I'm going to just say that you're very quite comfortable, because I think that there was a lot of things that you could do, and in some ways you were entertaining those possibilities. And I do, because this is how you are. You can very much get off track to allow yourself to.
Right.
And if that's wrong, you could say,
no, that's okay. I'll give you that one.
But that is true. Yeah. And it's very hard for you to focus and stay on track and not derail. There's a reason.
She's heard the show.
No.
She's looking at the bar.
Right.
Oh, the bar. Yeah, that says something. That speaks volumes.
That's all Sam.
I brought the bar.
That's all Sam.
I don't want you to into me.
No, but it's interesting. I think your money situation will be very solid for 2016. I do.
Good.
I don't know if you've got a peak in real estate, but if there is some things that you will entertain by the middle of year to the end of the year, that you are going to, and if this is wrong.
No, that's scary accurate.
Oh, thank you.
We just started. We moved in March, but now we're starting to look to buy again.
And, really?
Yeah.
Okay. You will, actually.
Nice.
You will definitely buy before the year's end. I will tell you that.
You can come to the housewarming, both of you.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
I would love to see that, and I'd like to meet the dog. You've always had fun, but you're much more enjoying the friends and the family at the pace that you're allowing yourself to enjoy now. It always seemed like you were always in a rush. You getting relaxed, you're finally coming into your own at the stage of life that you are in now. You weren't like that before.
No.
You had lots of things. Now you're actually, like I said from the beginning, you're enjoying your choice. The choices now. It's not what you had to do. It's more you're picking and choosing.
Yes, that's true.
I have to be honest
that's
with
true.
You. But yes, to look at you, you know, I would say if somebody, hey, you know, he looks like nothing bothers him. I think there's a lot you do keep in, and I do. And you don't want that. You don't want too many people knowing that, but yes.
Yeah, well, that's probably the most accurate thing you've said.
Okay.
And it's that's fine. You're welcome to say it. That's why I said we would do this. But that's 1,000% true.
Yeah.
If it was possible to have 1,000%.
Well, I do, because you're better when you're focused on maybe one or two things versus six or seven.
Mm-hmm.
This is because then you get lost, and you really, really do. And then sometimes you become a little hard to live with. And I'm sure your wife was here. She'd probably agree. Not in a bad way, but keeping you need a long leash. You can't be on a choke collar, my friend.
Well, yes, you would agree that I am oftentimes difficult to live with. That's another accurate thing.
You know, you're better in the public, and people go, God, he's such a great guy. He's so this, he's so that. Oh, my gosh. You know, your wife probably hears this all the time. She's
yes.
like, yeah, you don't live with him, though.
That's it, yeah.
But I have to tell you, if anybody needed you in a pinch, that's it. Now, whoever is around you, they will know if you are true to them, because you're not about beating around the bush. You've got no time to waste. If you don't really like somebody, you're not going to say anything. You're just going to go your merry way. This is it. You're not going to waste your time. You're very blunt about things. Like I said, you're at your most serious when you're joking.
That's wow. Sam nodding his head. He knows a couple of those things are accurate.
I gave her the cheat sheet.
Did you give her?
No, I
somebody.
Did. No,
I don't know if she talked to my wife.
We just met.
Because that would have been it.
Just met her.
No, that was very good. All right. Well, listen, okay. I don't want to hog all the time, because I'll have to come and sit down with you and be freaked out even more than I am at another time.
We will.
We've got a lot of people hanging on.
Okay.
So I want to get
ahead.
At least one done, because
that's
right
fine.
After the news, we're going to talk to Tom Skilling for a couple
gotcha.
Minutes. And then you said, Susan, that you'd hang around a little bit because people are waiting and waiting. So we're going to give as much as we can. Now, when you call in to ask Susan for a question, make sure you please have a direct question, because, as we said, time is short. So we want to it works better for you. You said if somebody asks you a direct question,
it does. It really does.
And all you need is their name, correct?
Their name. Well, if they could give me a birthday if they want, but I'm more with their name and their birthday. Whatever they want to give me is fine.
All right. Well, let's start with Jane. Hi, Jane. Happy New Year.
Hi. Happy New Year to you.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm so excited.
Oh, good. I'm excited, too. So what is your question?
Well, my birthday first is 12-19 of 63, if that does anything.
Okay.
But I was what I was calling for was about my dad. He passed away to be 8 years at the end of this month.
Mm.
And I think he only came to me once in a dream. I don't know if it was just me wishing that I saw him in the dream, or if he really did come to me in the dream, mm-hmm. but he looked very content.
Okay.
And it was a very good feeling. So I just want to know. And then I sometimes think I feel something around me. I don't know if it's him or someone else, mm-hmm. but just what's your take on that?
Well, I love the question. So great question. Dreams are real. Let me put that mm-hmm. to rest, what dreams are. They're not wishful thinking. Mm-hmm. Spirits will come to us in our dreams when we're most relaxed. Okay. They don't want to startle us. Mm-hmm. That is a big thing. So your dad coming through was absolutely real. I am going to say when you saw your dad, it wasn't long after he passed.
True. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because the spirit was still new. And he, that was his way of validating he made it to the other side. I also need to let you know that there's a big difference with earthbound spirits and spirits that cross over. You cannot cross over and come to somebody's dreams.
Okay.
So whenever, and I have a lot of loved ones that say, I haven't dreamt about him, but my girlfriend dreamt or my sister did. Why can't, he come to me? There's a reason. Because you're wearing the invisible veil. When people are so grief-stricken, they're creating blockers, and it does make it hard for spirit to come through. Understand that. But the fact that your father came in your dreams was validation that he crossed over. And he went
very
to the light.
Very happy. And he was a younger version of himself. But
That they choose. Just so everybody does know, when your time comes, you get to choose the stage that you want to present yourself.
Really?
I had a woman.
Elvis stamp?
You can't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I had a woman one time, and she was an earthbound spirit. And she did not want to go into the light. She was very, very old. And I looked at her, and she saw that I knew that I could see her. And I said, let me get you to cross over. And she says, oh, honey, I don't think that's a good idea. And I says, why? And she says, well, my husband died when I was in my 30s, and I was a very young widow. And if I cross over, he's going to see how old I am now.
Oh, geez.
No, really. So I said, but you can choose. And she goes, yeah, you can. She says, really? I says, yeah. And so I sent her to the light and made the light up, and she crossed over.
Nice. Well, Jane, thank you for the call. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. It does.
Thank you, Jane.
Take care, Jane. Susan Rowland is here, R-O-W-L-E-N, because I had some people texting how to spell your last name. Go to srowland.com or susan.rowland on Facebook. Susan's going to stick around. We're going to talk to Tom Skilling for a couple minutes after the news, and then we will take more of your calls. So if you're on the line, hang on. We'll get to you as soon as we can. Thank you, David. Happy New Year.
I thought he was going to say face looking good.
It is face looking good. It's Mark Jane Greco when he eats Kentucky Fried Chicken. All right, it is 6:38 on 720 WGN. Happy New Year. It's Brian Noonan in for Ro and Anna. And I have to say Happy New Year, who a man I've had the pleasure of talking to for the last couple of weeks. Happy New Year, Tom Skilling.
Well, right back at you, Brian. Happy New Year.
So we're doing some psychic readings in here, Tom.
Have you ever
been read?
No, I never have been. I always am impressed by the talent that is exhibited in doing this. There's quite a skill at doing this. I certainly don't begin to understand it, but it's fascinating.
I don't understand it either. Some of the stuff that Susan Rowland said to me was kind of accurate and scary.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm a little freaked out, Tom. I'm not going to lie.
We talk about parallel universes and stuff like that. Who's to say, this isn't going on? There's too much success with this not to say that, there's something to this. I think it's absolutely fascinating.
Did you have a good time last night? Did you celebrate after work?
I went home and I crashed. I went to bed because I had to come to work today. Yeah, How about you?
Yeah, Brian? Same thing. I went home and we had a couple friends over and had a little pizza, watched some TV, played some games, and that was it.
I know. My roommate was up when I got back and he said, I'm going to bed. So, that was... And I've talked to more people that were in the same situation today.
It's not for the faint of heart, Tom.
No, that's true.
We're responsible human beings.
I think, Brian, we're beyond that at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think you may be right. It's gotten very cold today, which is fine because it's January, but people are already complaining.
Yeah. And you hear about this flooding. You think about the people trying to deal with that. Can you imagine, you know, handling water coming into your home or in your into your neighborhood in this cold weather?
It's got to be the worst.
It's something. And I'll tell you, we've got a seasonable weekend on the way. It's certainly been a lot colder to open up the month of January. I think, Brian, we're beginning to see something of a pattern change. Now, whether it's just a transient thing or not, I don't know, but it looks like a colder regime is setting up for as we head into the middle of January, and that could start after a low pressure passes late next week. But in the short term, seasonable cool this weekend, some lake effect snow Sunday night, Monday. Then the snow is over. We get into some Pacific air, moderate and warm up a little bit the middle and end of next week, and then bring a low pressure through. That could put us close to the rain snow line. It's that kind of system you watch late next week, early in the weekend. Too early to say it's a sure thing yet, but it's interesting. And I think the lake effect snow Sunday night, Monday will be interesting. The eastern Great Lakes are getting hard hit. They've had over a foot in parts of New York State.
And that the lake effect, is that the wind coming down
yeah.
the north from the lake? And it's
exactly.
So people usually with that, and correct me if I'm wrong, the farther west you get away from the lake, you might not see anything.
Exactly. It's, okay. it's a fairly localized effect. One thing we do have going in areas that are prone to lake effect snow is, A, there's little ice on the lake because of the warmth that we've had up till now, and B, the lakes are running warm this year. So as we run this, cold air across them, that gets things going. But Sunday night, Monday.
Is it too early to tell if it's going to be a big thing, if it's going to be happening at all?
Oh, I wouldn't. At this point in time, it's way too early to attach inches to this. I don't think there's going to be a massive storm. I think it'll be kind of localized. But you could get some periods where it comes down a pretty good clip. You know, we look at the rate at which temperatures fall with height, and it's a pretty steep decline that we've got forecast here by Monday. That encourages the air down here on near the lake surface to rise, become buoyant and rise, and that produces your lake clouds. But it's only going to last a day.
Okay.
And then it looks like by Tuesday the sun's out and we're done with it. So whatever we get will be over by the time we get to late Monday night, Tuesday, it looks like.
And I know it sounds, we've been saying this all week, but it's January in Chicago,
it
so
is.
We have to start expecting some of this stuff.
Oh, we've just come off four consecutive above normal months. December finished 11.2 degrees above normal. That's an amazing anomaly. And the last time we put four above normal temperature months together was 4 years ago, so this is this has been quite a treat.
I like it.
Yeah.
Now, when do you leave for Bora Bora?
Oh, going late Sunday.
Late Sunday. So a week from Sunday, or this Sunday.
Sunday.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow! So you're getting ready.
Yeah, you know, and it's been interesting. They had a cyclone that developed west of there, so the waters are very warm as part of this El Nino down there. So I'm anxious to see it. I've never been down on that part of the world. It's in the southern hemisphere.
It's going to be fun, and I know you're going to be hypnotized by the way the water flows in the toilet, like we talked
absolutely.
About the other day.
Well, this is what I do on my vacations. I sit there and watch water go down toilets, you know, so.
It's nice. You have simple needs, Tom.
It's simple needs,
You don't set the bar
go
too
to
high.
Go to bed on New Year's Eve and watch the water go down the toilet on my, my vacations.
So you're a man who won't be disappointed.
Right.
That's the beauty of it. You
exactly.
go, you have a good time, everything's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, listen, have a wonderful trip and
Thank
a safe
you,
and
Brian.
Happy New Year. It's been a pleasure being able to talk to you the last couple weeks.
Oh, fun talking to you, Brian. You're a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, tell Susan Happy New Year for me, too.
I will. Can you give us a quick forecast before you take off?
Yeah. Tonight, scattered clouds down to around 20. Tomorrow up to 33, partly sunny. Sunshine and mixed clouds on Sunday, maybe a flurry in the afternoon, but up to 29, and kind of windy over the weekend, so there are going to be some wind chills. But the lake snow starts Sunday night late and continues on Monday, and then it's sunny again on Tuesday. But I think low 30s are forecast on Monday, and probably mid-30s by the time we get to the middle of next week.
Not too shabby.
No.
We'll have a wonderful time, whether you're staring at water or whatever you're going to do in Bora Bora, and we'll talk to you again soon, Tom. It's always
a
pleasure.
Happy
New Year.
You bet. Happy New Year to you as well.
That's the great Tom Skilling. You hear him with Roe every night at 6:30. All right. We're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, Susan Rowland is here. Everybody who's on the line, we're going to get to you as quickly as possible, so make sure you have a direct question to ask Susan. If you don't get through, go to srowland, rowlen.com, or susan.rowland on Facebook. We'll get you read after this on WGN. Shonda was hypnotized by my melodic read of the Apple Chevy spot. That's all right. It's Brian Noonan. Last few minutes in for Rowan Anna on 720 WGN. Susan Rowland is in studio with me. She's a psychic medium. She does personal business and investigative readings. You can get her at srowland, rowlen.com or susan.rowland on Facebook. A lot of people have been waiting to hear from you, Susan. So, again,
okay.
Make sure you ask a direct question because time is short. We'll start with Marie. Hi, Marie. You're on WGN.
Hi. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hi, Marie.
Hi. I don't know if you need it, but my birthday is April 4th of 1965.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I'm in a relatively new relationship, 3 months in, and is this one going to work out?
Okay. You need to think outside your box. Okay. When I say that, I don't mean it to be, you need to just not, you have tunnel vision sometimes on what you want to expect. In other words, how you see things, you have to give him a little slack here as far as he's an individual. So he's not going to think like you. So you're going to have to come to a better understanding of how others think and have a little leeway of understanding and then judge the relationship. You prejudge before. And
yep,
sometimes we all
true.
Do that. I get that. But try not to do that and see him for an individual, okay? But also see him for truth. Don't hope and wish.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Good.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
Good
Happy
luck,
New
Murray.
Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
All right. Let's keep rolling. Marnie's been holding on. Hi, Marnie. You're on WGN.
Hi. How are you?
We're well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hi, Marnie.
Hi. So my birthday is February 22nd, 1973.
Okay.
And I met a lady through work, and we each had an idea, and we're putting our idea together, and we're going to try to start up a business.
Okay.
So I wanted to ask you.
I love your partnering with this individual, because it seems like this individual is going to have the structure that you need. You are on a more, you're a free spirit, okay? So you could see it, you just don't have the tools to carry it through, and I like this individual because she does.
Awesome.
So, because you have, you know, you're both very smart, intelligent women, but you're both different, and that's
right.
What's going to be a success to carry it out. If you're both the same, it's not going to work. So where your weakness is her strength and vice versa.
Okay.
Good luck to you. It's wonderful.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye,
Good luck, Marnie. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks.
All right. You're very welcome. Susan Rowland is here. She's a psychic medium. We've got to, we'll get to as many of your calls as we can. Just remember a direct question. Let's go to Liz. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hi, Liz.
My birthday is 5/23/71. And the last couple of years, I've gone through a lot of changes and a lot of loss, and I just sort of find myself asking, well, what do I do now? What do I focus my energy on now?
Try to stay positive, and I understand what you've been through. I have to say that. And every time you've gone through a negative, it seems to put you back 20 steps back. I need you to shift how you see it. I know it's a tall order when I'm asking, but you have to be willing to put what happened in the past, but move forward and see what the new year brings you with more of a positive aspect, because then the spin on it will change in your favor.
Totally makes sense. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right. Good luck, Liz.
Thanks.
Susan, before we move on, just real quick, have you had people where you do a reading and they get very angry because people want to hear what they want to hear, and you're telling them something that, you know, they come in thinking you're going to tell them one thing and you tell them the opposite?
Very rare, but I did have a woman once. I'm not going to lie to you. She got very angry at what I told her because she wanted to know if her husband was going to come back to her, and I told her no.
Okay.
But before I do that, I always ask, do you want to know everything?
Yeah, do you want to know?
I do ask that.
All right.
Because I usually have a good sixth sense to know what they can handle, and I guide gently.
Right.
I do.
All right.
But yes, great question.
All right, let's get back to the phones. We've got an amazing response. Susan Rowland is here. She's giving readings to Ellen. Hi, Ellen. Happy New Year.
Hi. Happy New Year, you two. I'm going to out myself. My name is Nancy. I called in the last segment, but I didn't want Susan to spend all of her time rating me out, so I just want to tell you that.
Okay.
My birthday is 4/14/49. I am a retired registered nurse over 15 years, and 23 years ago I started a direct sales business. My business has really come to a grinding halt, and I am losing sleep trying to figure out if I should put energy into this and keep it going, or if I should just graciously wave goodbye to it. I have an enormous amount of talent that God has blessed me with, and I really think that talents are gifts that God has given you, and unless you share them, you know, they aren't any good, and yet I can be perceived as being a show-off. And so I'm really in a terrible place.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Nancy, listen, I am going to say something to you. You have anxiety because you're very intuitive yourself. That is one of your gifts. How you see things is pretty much before everybody else sees them. And this is why you've never been on the same level to most people. They don't understand you.
No.
Okay. You are a natural born teacher and a nurturer. You work best alone. I would say this business that you're putting all your money into is a, it's never a waste, but I'm going to tell you it's the wrong direction. Here, let me explain something. Every time you hit an obstacle, those are our guides and our angels, not punishing us, but that's not the direction we need to go. You need to pay attention to the signs. It's not that you're failing. You're failing if you stay. Realize that. It's very important to understand that. It's not that you're being punished. They're trying to reroute you. You should definitely do something that you can nurture or you can teach. You're a healer.
I am already a hospice volunteer, and I deliver Meals on Wheels. Yeah.
Okay, but you need to do something. You know why? Because you're a born natural, and you've done it so much before. I'm telling you, you came into this world wired that way. You're trying to change something that you are just naturally wired, and it's a beautiful thing. Oh, I'm going to tell you, you are one of these people I call human angels on earth.
Wow.
Oh,
look at that, Nancy.
Oh, my word.
No, but you need to see
it. So nice. I have seven sisters, and none of them like me.
They don't have to like you, but you do well. You do better with males, by the way. And you do better with much older people, not because you're in hospice, but older. Your own age and females have never been something that you've been good at.
You're right.
I know.
You're right.
Okay.
All right. Wow. Good luck, Nancy.
Thank
Happy
you.
New Year. You're
Thank
welcome.
You. Thank you.
Let's see. Oh, there's so many different. I'm trying to, because we're running out of time, I'm trying to see which one would be better. Let's talk to Joe, because we've had a lot
okay,
of the ladies call in. Hi,
idea.
Joe.
Hi, how are you?
We're well. Happy New Year.
Okay, I'll make it very quick. I know you're coming to the end of this segment and you're going off the air. Anyway, just wanted to tell Susan, I had been married 47 years and my wife passed away. It'll be 2 years, the 15th of this month. And I've met a few ladies. I'm not looking for a romantic relationship, just companionship and I just kind of wonder what, you know, is maybe laying ahead down the road for me.
I want to say, first of all, Joe, I am sorry for your loss.
Well,
and it's been very difficult because you've had a lifetime with one person.
Oh, yeah, right.
And
right.
It is. I have
I met
to
her
say
in college,
that.
So, you know, a long time. Yeah.
You grew up together.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's always hard. But I am going to say one thing. I am getting your wife's spirit loud and clear for some reason.
I get it. Okay.
She wants you to go on. She doesn't look at it as a threat to her memory whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
She's saying everything that we had, that's never going to change.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
A little bit of it, I know you're trying, but I think your mind is telling you that, but your feeling, your heart isn't. And this is why you're reluctant to move forward. This is why things aren't falling in place for you.
Okay. I mean, I would say, yeah, there's
some
truth in that. And
you're not in alignment with moving forward with your mind. Okay,
well,
and your heart.
I'll just quickly tell you, I went through the whole thing with the antidepressants, which messed up my brain totally, and I would advise anyone that is taking an antidepressant, maybe it's up to each individual, get off of it, because I couldn't remember things, I was confused, and it was one of the worst things that I had asked my doctor to put me on was an antidepressant. I've come through that, and I feel so much better with
but
my life.
Honestly, you needed to go to that journey to learn it so you can tell others. You know, I always say even something detrimental is never a waste, okay? It's what we do with it.
But,
But
it was rough. It was a struggle.
It was. I agree. It probably was.
Yeah.
All right, Joe. Well, I hope that helps, and good luck.
Okay.
Happy
Thank
New
you.
Year.
Thank you.
Take care.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We've got about a minute. Can we get one more in a minute? We'll get one more in a minute. All right. Let's let's see. Oh, how about Denise? Hi, Denise.
Oh, hi.
Real quick.
Hi, Denise.
Hi. I have never met my biological father, nor have I ever seen a picture of him. And I'm wondering if a medium would be helpful to me. He is passed away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If a medium, did you think he'd have anything to say to me, never having met me or knowing me?
Yeah, let me explain really quick. Spirit will come. If you want them to come through and you're thinking about them like I mentioned earlier, they will come through. Okay. I would highly recommend you see a medium and make contact, because that is something that will happen. Choose wisely. Don't go to these psychics with the flashy lights. You know, you want somebody who's reputable and who has a good history. But yes, okay, I would definitely recommend that.
Good luck, Denise. I hope it works out for you. Susan, thank you so much. This was really incredible, and it was nice to meet you and have you in.
Such a nice pleasure to be here.
If people need to get a hold of you, they should go to srowlen.com, R-O-W-L-E-N, or they can connect with you on Facebook, Susan.Rowlen. And it was great. Happy New Year and
Happy
all
New
the
Year
best to you.
You.